Can I have everybody's attention? I'm hereby calling the meeting of KIPP SoCal Public Schools Board of Directors to order at 1:09. If we can keep it at low level in the audience, that would help as well. I'll try to speak out as loud as I can. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the December board meeting. I'm going to ask Belen Orr to record the attendance. Belen?
Naeem,
Here.
John,
Here.
Carlos,
Here.
Randy,
Here.
Mel,
Here.
Phil,
Here.
EJ, not present, Heather, not present, Nancy, not present, Julie, not present. Norma, not present. Luis?
Here.
Okay, that's everyone, Luis. That's seven board members, which is four.
Okay, we will begin with logistics and norms. In compliance with SB 126, members of the public are able to listen and provide public comment from any KIPP SoCal site. We currently have the meetings available across our KIPP SoCal community. For those watching at a KIPP SoCal site, we do have interpreters, as we do here as well, online to provide Spanish-English translation. If you are at a site and need to listen to the meeting in a different language, check with the school site personnel to make this change. The interpretation settings can be accessed by clicking the globe icon in your Zoom menu. For audio purposes, we will utilize roll call voting. After presentation of the item, any questions and discussion, I will ask for a motion and a second. Board members, when you are making a motion, please state your name for the record. If we have those motions, I will turn it over to Belen to conduct the roll call vote. She will read off each board member's name. As we approach a voting item, please make sure you are prepared to respond with either yes, no, or abstain. As a reminder, for board members and members of the public, KIPP SoCal board meetings are recorded and these recordings are posted. Because these meetings are recorded and are being streamed across KIPP SoCal, it is important that noise levels are kept to a minimum so that everyone can hear. Please be mindful of this as others are speaking. Here is a overview of today's agenda. Next slide. Belen, do we have any public comment?
Yes, we do have members of the public for comment. We're going to start with the sign-up sheet here at the main meeting, and then I will move into, I have from our schools, we do have members of the public who are signed up at our school, so I will call on them when it is their turn within that. But for now, we will go ahead and get started. Given the number of speakers that we have, as well as the time allotted for public comment, we will provide 2 minutes for each speaker so that we can hear from as many speakers as possible.
Okay.
So if we can move to the next
Sure.
slide, and then Jen, if you can run the 2 minute timer once they start speaking. Okay, so our first.
1 second. Does Luis have to read the protocol?
Oh, yes.
Before we get into public comment, I do need to read something to you, and I want to share with you something from the public. This I need to read. Members of the public may address the board about agenda, both agenda items and non-agenda items. By law, the board is only allowed to discuss or take action on items listed on the agenda. The board may, at its discretion, refer a matter to the KIPP SoCal management or add the issue to a future meeting agenda for discussion. It is possible that there may be more interested speakers than time available to speak. We have made our time for public comment from 30 minutes to a total of 15 minutes. Before we have time to move on to the rest of before we have to move on to the rest of the agenda, individual speakers will be invited to address the board for up to 2 minutes. Speakers may have less time depending on the number of individuals who are in person and addressing the board.
Please respect the time limit allotted to each speaker. Note that an individual is allowed a single appearance at a public comment. The led will recognize each individual speaker. Speakers are required to please state their name for the record and the topic they are addressing. The time limit created will indicate when the time has expired. Our meeting host will mute speakers if they continue to speak after their allocated time has expired. Board members are advised to listen to speakers and not engage in discussions. All school sites are welcome to remain online as silent observers following the public comment period. I will ask that we are mindful of the public level so that here and those watching across Crypto Cal from here. Before we begin, I do want to address all of you. The agenda items here. First of all, I want to thank all of you for the emails that you sent to all of us, the board members, and the leadership of Crypto Cal. It's very important that we got to hear from you and your sentiment. And it's hard not to say that this is an easy situation because it's not. It's a painful situation and a very difficult situation. So again, I welcome all of you for being here and expressing how you felt and the compassion and passion that you need. I only ask a couple of things about all of you, is that we be respectful of each other. I know it's painful, I know it's difficult, but I can tell you as an attorney, anger, heartache, disagreement does not justify threatening anyone. So I'd ask for that respect, but I will tell you if anybody threatens anyone here, you will be escorted out. Because especially when we have children present, I expect and I hope that we can all act in a professional and respectful way. We will give you the space. We recognize what's going on. So that's all I ask. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, at this time we will begin our public comment. Our first speaker is Corey Chappell. Chappell.
Hi, my name is Corey Chappell. It has been brought to light that sometime between May and July of 2023, five of your 11 voting members were selected behind closed doors to participate in an ad hoc committee. Nobody has been able to provide the minutes documenting when or how this committee was formed. This is in direct violation of the Brown Act. I would like to request that those details be provided before the board revisits this item and a formal vote is taken. Should you choose to disregard my request and continue with today's vote, I urge you to vote no on the closure of Kimpo there. Three of the four factors being cited as reasons for the recommendation directly correspond to enrollment. Currently, Kiponair is not represented on the online platforms parents visit when researching school. I was not able to find Kiponair listed anywhere on greatschools.org, and on niche.com reflects enrollment at 112, the same number of students enrolled in our inaugural year. There is nowhere to see how our students rank in comparison to other kids their age, and prior to December 4th, there were no parent reviews stating personal experience with Kiponair. This exclusion of Kipo there and supporting information parents seek when shopping for school is a major contributing factor to under-enrollment. Regardless of our near invisibility, with the exception of losing one second grader in 2023, Kipo there classes have increased in size each time they promote to the next grade level, according to the data provided by Incorporated. This growth is in spite of the lack of Kipo there's online presence, as well as the challenges of now co-locating on two different Prop 39 sites. There is a clear path forward to protecting your stakeholders, your reputation, and our poderosos. Vote no on closing Kipo there. Correct the gross misstep of our school's online visibility and rectify the Brown Act violation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Sandy Kwan.
Hi, my name is Sandy Kwan. I am the father of second grade founding father at Kipo there. First off, let the record show that I'm submitting a petition of 1,636 signatures voting no for the closure of Kipo there. So I've lived in the Montebello, and our family lives in the Montebello district for over 20 years. And so we have family that's been in the district And I gotta say that Kip is needed in Montebello Unified. The reason why there's such an anti-charter campaign going on over there is because there's, you guys are a threat. You guys offer things that they cannot offer to their kids. And that's desperately needed. And I hope that you consider that when they put themselves and their needs over their families and communities, that if you do the same here, it might have repercussions. So I just want the board to reflect on that, think about that as you make your decision. So the first thing I always ask my kid when I pick him up is, what was your best day today? And he always said recess. So over the weeks, it's been presented that, KIPP, we're providing KIPP, these programs to be KIPP. But my son is way more connected to recess because he's, that's where he makes his connection with his friends. He also chooses to stay in with his teachers to learn additional things outside of the KIPP programs. And so these are things that are going to be taken away. So please, we're considering. I am also a systems engineer for Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I just want to, for the record, I am expressing my own opinion, and my views are not of JPL or NASA, but I just want to anecdotally say that, what makes JPL and NASA great is that we don't give up. We dare mighty things, and we try our best to fight for projects that we see.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, your time is up. We're going to have to move on to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Monique Horace.
Good afternoon, members of the board and KIPP SoCal community. My name is Monique Horace. I am also a parent of a child at KIPP Sevierre. Today, a committee will recommend the closure of KIPP Haldera and two other schools. And today, you may hear that committee throw around numbers and projections that are skewed in order to tell a story that will be the premise of the upcoming recommendations. Numbers that have not been properly vetted and numbers that were never intended to be associated with a founding school on a co-located site. Numbers that are based on models that admittedly by Ms. Martinez were developed over 20 years ago. This four classroom model was impossible to achieve more for there, given we have four grades that will require 16 instructional spaces. Our space being co-located on two sites only have 15 instructional spaces available. With the Montebello School District being very clear that there was no additional space available on our site. You may also be presented a commission study used as a supporting data for the upcoming recommendation. This report only includes high-level data. Yes, there is an overall decline in the eastern region in which KIPP Haldera resides. However, the report actually indicates a 2% increase in the five-year charter enrollment trend for that region. What the report doesn't provide is data on an individual school level, nor does it provide recommendations and or detailed concerns other than identifying that 7% of the affiliate charter have a moderate or high enrollment rate. Not once did this report identify KIPP Haldera specifically as being included in this review or provide a recommendation for KIPP Haldera. I'm asking today that the board considers how a decision as important as a school closure can be made based on such limited information without a professional standard of care and with the public and community being shut out of the process. Please honor KIPP's values, the governing law, and the students and families of KIPP Haldera. And make sure that the motion
is voted on.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Jorge Luis Alvarez.
Before I begin, I just want to ask what on the protocols, it did say 3 minutes. So I think a lot of parents were practicing what they wanted to say based on 3 minutes, and now it's.
And what I could say is, there's been a lot more people who signed up, so we want to give as many other family members, other than the ones here, the opportunity to speak.
Can you reset it? I'm asking a question that had nothing to do with public comment. Can we reset the clock?
Yeah.
I had nothing to say about what I'm here for. I just had a protocol.
Yes, sure.
If you wanted. Dear board members, my name is Juan Luis Alvarez, and I'm the parent of three children at Kid Poder, ages 4, 4, and 7. My wife and I live here in Montebello. And as Angela Martinez informed you, this is not a speech about emotions and feelings. We are not crying, we're upset, and we're ready to save our beloved school, including seeking legal counsel. I respectfully ask you to vote against the ad hoc recommendation to close Kid Poder, but I also come asking you for a favor. Ask yourself what a yes vote will mean. From a public relations standpoint, is working without any community involvement your brand? Is speaking to rather than working with communities in your code of conduct and in your charter? If you knew that enrollment numbers were critically down, as you have alleged at Poulet, why not send regional recruiters from the very beginning? If charters are all about choice, why hide valuable information from parents over 3 months? Until you provide transparency and make a sincere effort to work with all of us, many wonder if closing the Kid Poulet for under-enrollment was a fact or a pretext to avoid spending additional funds to build a campus. How would donors feel that a sustainability study was conducted before a $4.5 million purchase in that app? On another matter, why were parents given renderings of Kid Poulet as late as November 2, 2023 when you had already made the unilateral decision to close? Is that acting in good faith? You are looking at a major public relations nightmare if you do not change course and choose to collaborate with the families you claim to serve. Kip SoCal can still make things right with the community that it has injured and insulted. I respectfully urge all Kip SoCal board members to vote no to close Kip Poder so that a conversation with the community, not a monologue, takes place to find solutions to keep Kip Poder open. We do not need your thoughts and prayers. This is your chance and it will be your legacy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Joella Valdez.
Good afternoon, board. Let the record reflect that I am submitting to the board 11 copies of public comments and letters in support of the Kid Poder community. I want to call your attention to what is a substantial violation of a central provision of the Ralph and Brown Act, which may jeopardize the finality of the action taken by Kip SoCal and its presiding members. In recent discussions, the CEO of Kip SoCal has indicated an ad hoc committee was established by the board in May or June 2023. After review of all board and committee meeting records and agendas within the last year, there was no audio recording nor documented meeting minutes to support this claim. As a result, an action as defined in Government Code 54952.6 was improperly taken outside of an open public meeting to establish this ad hoc committee, which directly violates Government Code Section 54952.2. Further, since the action related to the establishment of this committee has not been recorded during a public board meeting as required, there is no evidence that a specific purpose or term has been established for said committee. Without these components, this committee cannot be defined as an ad hoc and is more aligned with the standing committee, which does fall under the requirements of the Ralph Brown Act. Any meeting held by a standing committee shall be in compliance with Section 54953 of the Government Code. I demand that Kip SoCal Board cure and correct the illegally taken actions as follow. Immediately pull the pending motions, including Agenda Item 4, Sub-Bullet B, hold an open public meeting related to all subject matter, related to enrollment issues, and properly form a standing committee. Should you fail to take appropriate corrective action, I will proceed with taking legal action to remedy this violation.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Sandra Esparza.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the board this afternoon before the vote is taken. This shame we find ourselves here. I know in the last 2 weeks, since the news was abruptly released to us, we have established how passionate we are about our kids' education. I will get right to it. Angela Martinez failed Poder. The regional recruitment team failed Poder. the ad hoc committee failed for this. I am imploring you, the board, not to fail for this. If Ms. Martinez saw this coming when Pueblo was sunsetted, why is it that she did not give Poder the same opportunity she did that school a year ago? Poder just acquired an in-house recruiter in June this year, not last year. Where was Ms. Martinez when we needed her to advocate for Poder? Angela Martinez failed Poder by not alerting and asserting the enrollment issue with parents of Poder and the staff of Poder. Poder did not receive the same regional support for recruitment as other schools did a year ago. The regional recruitment was a no-show at our event this year. This is an unjust and systemical neglect in this aspect. Over 70 applications have been taken since the hiring of the recruiter at Poder. Imagine what we could do if given the opportunity to continue. Regional recruiters failed for this. The ad hoc committee has failed to present any other viable options, such as sunsetting Pueblo and offering spaces at Poder. There are parents enrolled at Pueblo Maywood who actually live in Montebello, and they have no clue KIPP is in Montebello, their own city. The ad hoc committee has failed to report efforts parents aren't willing to make to keep the school going.
Go ahead and wrap up that sentence and then we'll move on to the next speaker.
I'm sorry. This is a pivotal moment for the board. You could save your grant. You could save over 200 families. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Jerry Chappell.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board, thank you for your time. I am going to cede some of my time to our child who is directly affected by this decision. Go ahead.
Hello, I am an official student of KIPP Poder, and I am trying to save this school fast. If anything concerns you, I am a little boy in college chat. Thank you for your time. Good afternoon, board. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to follow that up with the fact that the parents of KIPP Poder, and I'm sure the other schools feel lied to. We were promised a brand new building being built and ready in 2025. We came into this school expecting longevity for our child. What we found out was that shortly after we were enrolled in the school, it was recommended that the school be closed completely. That the community that we have built with these other families was at jeopardy. And we understand the bottom line. We understand this is a very difficult decision for everybody. But this is our future. This is our children's future. This is our community. And you're pulling the rug out from under us. We were promised things that you never intended to deliver, including that in November, we were given another rendering of the brand new building that's not being built. But you didn't say that. You said, hey, come join our school. Now we're asking, give us a chance to help you populate the school with families that want to be in a KIPP program. We believe in what you do. That's why we're here fighting it. That's why these people have given up the last 2 weeks of their lives, dinners, work, so we can be there and fight for this program, which it feels you're not willing to fight. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Sylvia Lopez.
Hi, my name is Sylvia Lopez. My daughter is Sophia Lopez, a founding student of KIPP Generations, 7th grade. Here I have letters of some of the students at KIPP Generations showing their feelings. And this can be passed around as well. And you can read some of that. I struggled with the decision of sending my daughter to a public school after no longer being financially able to continue sending her to the private Catholic school she started at the age of 3. At that time, it was devastating for us to have to find another school where she can thrive. Her education is of the utmost importance to me and my family. I was so stressed. We found Kip at the right time. The middle school years are so fundamental in their development, and I didn't want her to be in a public school where she had to be not only get good grades, but also be scared for her safety or have disruption in learning every day in class, as goes on through most inner city schools. Kip seemed to fit the bill with low classroom sizes, awesome teachers, very open and communicative leadership with Mrs. Dong and the staff. They have been nothing short of amazing. They truly care. We have grown to love each other. In just 1 year, we have built a community. It would be detrimental to our students to close the school, from their mental health to their grades to their overall lives. Black and brown students deserve a school like KGA. We deserve leadership like Mrs. Dong. The community deserves KIPP as an option to the less than ideal surrounding schools in Gardena. Give us a fighting chance to boost enrollment, to boost our visibility, to at the very least carry the founding scholars through. How can my daughter start another new school for eighth grade, then start another new school for high school? Do you not care about these kids? We have names and faces. We are not just dollar signs. Give us a chance. To close and skip KIPP school means KIPP is a failure. Do you want to see your brand viewed as a failure? You will lose thousands more students due to the bad publicity. Make it right. Do the right thing. We are KGA. Please see us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Ebony Stewart.
Also have a speaking, taking some of my time. My name is Ebony Stewart. I have a sixth grader who's been at KIPP since she's been in the first grade. Since she was in the first grade, I planned for her to graduate from KIPP because I believe in the school. Now I'm stuck finding her another school because the other kids outside of generations don't fit the bill as far as I feel safety and just community. Like, we build community with Miss Dawn, Miss Crystal, and all the staff. Anytime I need to talk or anytime I have a concern, they listen. The kids didn't be my
Hello, my name is Sophia Lopez, and I'm a founding student at KGA. KGA means family to me. It means team, love, care, optimism, courage, empathy, and much more. KIPP cares for me. They're loving and much more. Sorry. If this school closes, I don't know what I'll do without it. The best memory I have of this school is when we went to SoFi Stadium. We made many great memories there, and I'll never forget them. Something I love about this school is that every last Friday of each month, we have a fun run, and the next one to come will be a winter carnival. This school has many fun activities for us to do, and that's why we love you. Please don't close the school. The teachers and parents will be overwhelmed and stressed. We won't find a school slash community as great as this. We'll be devastated. Vote y'all on closing our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Karina Chavez.
Good afternoon, KIPP SoCal KIPP. The reason we have joined this meeting this afternoon is because we are extremely concerned about the closure of KIPP Generations Academy in the city of Gardena. Although there are many elementary schools in our city, there are not enough options for middle school. There are closing of school due to low enrollment of students. I'm pretty sure that given the sufficient time, we can select more students to join our team by the end of the school year. KIPP Generations Academy is a great charter school where everybody is welcome, where every student is greeted by their name in the morning by polite teachers and staff, where every student is helped in the subjects that need improvement, where a basic student can turn into an A-plus student like my child. Please help us maintain KIPP Generations Academy open in the city of Gardena and give us the opportunity to grow and expand our education. Please help us find our forever campus. Save our students' future, save our teachers, and save our staff.
Our children's education matters. Angela Martinez and SoCal Kids, please keep the promise you made to the families and the children. In Kid Generations Academy, we are not just a school. We have become a family, and we are in this together. Keep SoCal, stand beside us, not against us. Thank you. And we have 139 petitions signed and 534 online signatures as well to keep Kid Generations Academy open in Regina. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Trisha Dong.
I'm the proud founding school leader of Kid Generations Academy. It was fall 2019 when I was told I would be the founding middle school leader of a new school in Gardena, where my whole family was born and raised, and where I am raising my two kids. This was a true dream come true. But dreams don't happen overnight. If you were on the board since 2019, you remember this timeline. KGA was voted not to open in November 2019 due to facilities. Then in 2020, we were promised a building in Watts. I was sent pictures of the building plan and saw what Generations could be. But when hearing this building was also promised to philosophers, I said it was wrong to take that away. Then we were moved to San Pedro, even after a study done in 2019 named the decreased enrollment and again promised another building. I toured that building, enrolled students, and again, it was shut down after a board vote. People asked, why are you staying with this organization after 2 years of broken promises? And I said, because at the end of the day, I believe Kids SoCal would do the only thing that mattered, keep promises to kids and communities. Throughout 2021 to 22, every day we knocked on doors throughout Gardena, and we were the first Kids SoCal middle school to open fully enrolled requiring a lottery. Fall 2022, we opened our doors, but never once were we told that our existence was at stake. You told us to downsize, we did. We did not open a second fifth grade class, even though we had the students. You said to enroll, so every time a student left, we enrolled a new student. And yes, we did have a wait list. You said we would be on Prop 39, so we built relationships with our co-located campus to the point where they wanted to come today. You said to engage with the community, so we built strong relationships with Mayor Serta and the Gardena City Council. This all to set up Generations for a future in Gardena. We did what you asked for and even more. We followed your plan and your guidance. We looked and look where we ended up. As I stand in front of you, the most heartbreaking part of this is Kim SoCal, you have truly lost your way. I never once believed that you would break promises, that you were raising promises to our families, our students, and our whole community trusted you. Our community is being displaced by your mistakes of this time. And you claim it's education for liberation. This is not liberatory. This is aggressive.
Tom, your time is up.
Yes, thank you.
At this time, I'll call our next speaker, Patricia Gonzalez. As a mother of three kidsters, it is extremely concerned that this executive leadership would decide to displace over 650 students without a plan to service these kids back into a school, a KIPP school. This administration has lied to us, has misled us for the past 6 months. It was just back in August when we had a meeting advising us of our new campus. And again, we were left with empty promises. This recommendation of a foreclosure plan began back in May. According to Ms. Belcher, yet again in August, we were presented with our new permanent facility. Data continues to be manufactured and manipulated to fit a profit and loss report. This recommendation is damaging to the kids' image as well to these children that are being displaced. My three children have experienced the level of education provided to this community, provided to these teachers. These teachers not only love and support our children, but go beyond to ensure every child is successful.
The fact is, Kip Claudette, teachers, staff, and children in the community represent the core values that are posted on the Kip SoCal website. I ask this board to overrule this recommendation given by the CEO and give these children the opportunity, the staff, the community to stay open and boost these enrollment numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Steffi Alvarado.
I don't have nothing written, so I'm just going to speak from what I feel. A lot of us parents were advised very late about this decision. We only had 2 weeks, so we've been coming to all the meetings. Some of us, you guys make the meetings as well at a time that the parents are working, which it makes sense. You guys don't want as many parents coming or getting advised. It just makes me feel, and us parents, that you guys really do not care about our kids' education. We do care. We want our kids to have the best education, and that's what we have a new kid. You promised us a vision. You lied to us. Everything you guys promised, the buildings, hearing everybody's story here, you guys are lying to us. Even if you're saying you don't have the money, you could have told us ahead of time. When was this recommendation made? When did you guys decide on this? It didn't let us know, but we could help. My son has a speech delayment, and he has improved so much in KIPP. From coming from the pandemic, being on the computer, all of us parents went through that. And now we're experiencing this with you guys lying to us. If you knew you cannot build this school since the beginning, why even promises this vision? And your guys' answer is the money, which is common sense, is the money. But I have a feeling, which is, you guys have this plan at the beginning. Why can't you guys advise us ahead of time? We can help you. We're a community. We want the best for our kids. We're a low-income community, which you guys are aware of that. I'm just very frustrated with this decision, like all of the parents here. And I just think this was premeditated since the beginning. It was. Because you could have told us this since the beginning. Hey, you know what? We can't, but this promise is valid. And we, I don't know, I feel if this decision was made in June, we could have had, or July or August, at least 1 month.
Thank you very much. Weeks,
we got a lot of reasons. I know it's done. I'm done.
Thank you.
You could have gave us more time.
Thank you.
Shame on all of you.
Our next speaker is Zabdiel Lugo.
My name is Zabdiel Lugo. I have a speech written, which was for a 3-minute speech, which I thought we had received when we were told we would be able to be granted. But I'm going to put this speech aside because what I see is that Kip Claudette is an amazing structure. It's an amazing organization. The neighborhoods that you guys are outreaching, the neighborhoods that you guys are going into, are obviously neighborhoods that need this type of education. And what I see, and I just quickly searched a Google search, general responsibilities of the CEO, says, oversee the strategic direction of an organization, implement changes and propose plans for finance for fiscal responsibility. I see personally that the issue is there. The issue is that this person, Angela Martinez, met with us a few days ago, and she tells us that the strategy, the plan that she has, was created 20 years ago. We're seeing numbers that were marketing that was done before 2003. this is the program that she's trying to fiscally maintain responsible. But it doesn't make sense. 2003 was a complete different time. 20 years ago, you know, it was a, especially in these days, this day and age, every single year, we should be updating our research. We should update what makes Kid Poder, how many students do we need? Because she's telling us we need 360 students per class, or sorry, for the program to work. But this was created 20 years ago. Overall, I'm just imploring and I'm saying vote no, and please consider who your CEO is. Angela Martinez, thank you.
Thank you very much. So at this time, so per the protocol, we have 15 allotted speaker slots here at the primary meeting location. We are going to move to our KIPP SoCal sites where we have speakers from five sites, and I will begin the process to unmute and call the speakers as it is their turn. For those who will be speaking, please note we will go ahead and unmute the attendee name that was provided to me by the school site who's hosting. And then when the 2 minutes are up, I will need to mute and then move on to our next speaker. So just a moment. Our first speakers, per the order that we listed, we will start with KIPP Generations Academy. And I know that we have two speakers there. So our first speaker there will be Taiwo Onubokan. And I will unmute and we will start the timer once the speaker begins. So just a moment. This part will be a little bit slower just because of the technology part. So just bear with me. Okay, Taiwo, you are able to speak. Please go ahead with your comment.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
We can hear you. Please go ahead.
Everyone, you know, I chose KIPP because I was experiencing the public school sector, and I've always thought the charter schools were giving the competitive advantage to the school district, you know, because we all talk about the public school system is archaic, hasn't changed since, you know, separate but equal. And for me, I felt like the charter schools give brown and black students a chance and an opportunity for an education without having to go to private school and pay a college or pay high tax bracket income to live in a certain neighborhood to get better public education. So what I didn't understand is the political water behind the charter schools, which has been really eye-opening to a certain extent. But ultimately, KIPP Generations has been a beautiful experience for me because I've had transparency to my kids' performance. The teachers care. They love the kids. They're passionate about their job. But what I didn't estimate was the more political, treacherous component of the back end of the decision-making process. If a school has been given 16 months to succeed, they should be given the entire allotment as any business is allotted to grow at least 5 years. And I've been in corporate America for 20 years, and I do not understand why 16 months would be the indicator of success for a school. And it also feels unfair to not give these students, maybe because they are an underrepresented and under-resourced neighborhoods, an opportunity to succeed with an education, the time that any new school should be given. So I'm very, very, very saddened to hear that KIPP doesn't seem to be any different than the public system and in regards to supporting underrepresented neighborhoods and under-resourced neighborhoods with an opportunity for more than 16 months. I
thank
really
you
wish
very,
that you guys would keep this
for
at least 5 years,
comments.
Give them a chance, give Ms. Dong a chance to do what she can do for this neighborhood
thank
to revitalize.
Thank you very much for your comment. Your time has
school,
ended.
Build up the future leaders of America.
Our next speaker is Charity Johnson, who will be speaking from KIPP Generations Academy. Charity, you now have permission, so please go ahead and we will go ahead and unmute, and the timer will begin once you begin speaking.
My name is can you hear me? Okay,
yes,
sorry.
We can hear you.
Thanks. My name is Charity, and I have a seventh grader at Generations. We were extremely shocked to learn that Generations was closing after being open for only 2 years. In Gardena, there are no options for public free middle school students other than Perry, which is not really an option due to its constant dangers and huge student body. You promised our community a school where the students would be loved, cared for, encouraged, and helped from their entrance into KIPP through high school, college, and beyond, which included a staff that would be that would truly care about our children and want to see them succeed. And now you plan to take it away before the founders have even graduated. This is a slap in the face to our community, who is truly in need of this safe, free public education option. If you choose to close this school before it has had a chance to begin, you are teaching our students that they should not try out new things because they will be taken away. They will learn that underprivileged students do not deserve a good education, and in turn feel that it is not that a good education is not worth fighting for. Our son has blossomed at this school. When entering into sixth grade, I and his fifth grade teacher were very concerned that his ADHD would destroy his chances of having a successful journey in junior high, as LAUSD turned their back on him, ignoring his needs, and blatantly refused any support. Generations worked with him to make sure that he has the tools and the support that he needs to succeed. He struggles still, but the teachers and staff work with him, give him goals, and help him achieve those goals with patience, love, and respect. Ethan would not get this support at a larger school, as he would be labeled a problem child and get brushed under the rug with all the other struggling students. I realize everything comes down to a budget and money. If there's any way to keep the school open, at least until the founders graduate, please look into these options. If cuts need to be made, give the Generations parents the opportunity to vote if they are okay with keeping the school open in light of the cuts. The staff are all invested in the community and school with outreach programs. They were fully enrolled and given the chance, they will be again. It takes time to build a reputation in a community, and you are cutting the reputation of KIPP and any trust for a better future off at the knees. KIPP says they are educators for liberation, but our Black students are being displaced without other real and safe options in the South Bay area.
Thank you very much for your comment. At this time, we're going to move to speakers from KIPP Poder. I will get that set up. Please note, our first speaker will be Carmen Sanchez. She will be providing her comment in Spanish. So if anyone needs to have their headset on, please go ahead and do so. So just a moment.
Headsets for you available if you need translation.
Okay, Carmen, puede empezar. Cuando empiece a hablar, van a empezar los dos minutos.
Sí, muy buenas tardes a todos, al comité de KIPP SoCal. Mi nombre es Carmen Sánchez y estoy aquí para apoyar por la escuela de mi hija de KIPP Poder. Tenemos 3 años aquí, están en el distrito de Montebello, es la única escuela charter. Solamente tenemos 3 años y no nos están dando la oportunidad para demostrar o para tener el tiempo suficiente de que los niños se involucren más. La escuela ha sido esencial, su equipo de maestros ha sobresalido entre los niños. Simplemente les pedimos que por favor voten en no cerrar nuestra escuela. Necesitamos que nuestros niños sigan trabajando con sus maestros, con su comunidad que han... Les ha costado adaptarse viniendo de una pandemia. Por favor, voten en de que no cierren KIPP Poder. Gracias.
Gracias, Carmen. Our next speaker, also providing comment from KIPP Poder, is Amara Johnson. So at Poder, you can go ahead and unmute. And then the 2 minutes will begin once you begin speaking.
We're ready, go.
We can close our school because this school is meant for children, and we've only been here like for a few years, and I was hoping to to end the school until I was in fourth grade, but not in second grade because I'm too little right now. I want to get older until I end this school, and this school is the best, and I don't want to close it. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to move to our speakers from KIPP Pueblo Unido, where we have two speakers. Our first speaker will be Evelyn Alaniz. So let me get you set up, and then your 2 minutes will start when she begins speaking. Okay, so for the team at KIPP Pueblo, Evelyn is able to begin.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Diana is actually going to speak first because our other parent has to pick up her student.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Diana.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Diana Mancilla, and I am a proud parent at KIPP Pueblo Unido. I am here today to advocate for our kids' future education. We are asking for your support to keep our campus open or to explore other options to prevent our school's closure. When I learned about KIPP schools and their unconventional grade levels from TK to eighth grade, I knew our disorganization could provide the stability that we need for our kids' education. Stability means having a safe, predictable, and motivating environment in which to learn and develop. Stability also means having a consistent and supportive relationships with teachers, peers, and other professionals. Our commitment to Pueblo Unido has been so strong that we kept our heads high when you decided to close our upper schools, shaking our stability. I know that this proposal to close KIPP Generaciones, Poder, and Pueblo Unido wasn't made lightly, and that your decisions will have a lasting effect on how KIPP Socal is perceived by the public. This will be a turning point for this organization. That is why I urge you to rethink your vote. The main reason why our campus is closing, according to Angela Martinez, is low enrollment. One possible factor that contributes to low enrollment in Pueblo Unido is having a split campus. It makes it harder for us to have a sense of community and identity at school. Not having a permanent facility limits us from showcasing our true potential. Your vote today affects our students, in which our children who are not here today to express their confusion and pain that you will cause if you shut down their campus. This decision is happening so abruptly that today many parents that drop off their kids to school are not aware or don't have access to this meeting to hear the consequences. I am confident that with more time and the right tools, such as a permanent building, our school can be as successful as any other school. Our community needs education like this. Our school's core value is Pueblo Unido jamás será vencido. Please don't give up on our kids. Give them the opportunity to have education.
Thank you. The first speaker who was signed up at Pueblo has stepped away for a moment. So we're going to continue in the order and we will, is she back? Okay, perfect. Okay, so we'll go ahead with Evelyn Alaniz at KIPP Pueblo, providing comment from KIPP Pueblo Unido.
Hello, this is my daughter, Selena, speaking.
Keep my school open. KIPP Pueblo Unido.
My name is Evelyn. I speak on behalf of all families to keep the school open and find some creative solutions. If other sites are getting permanent locations, then help relocate both Pueblo Unido sites and the campuses to the campuses they are leaving from. We can fundraise or petition somehow just so we can keep our students together. We were not advised or informed prior to this abrupt notice and constant meetings with this very limited communication. It seems that they purposely don't want parents involved or speaking up for our students and schools. We've already had to accept and wait patiently for more and permanent options since our K and 8 sites weren't built. CEO Angela Martinez says she had been actively trying to help fill in the seats needed but in all honesty, we've never seen her or any efforts with her trying to contribute to our sites. Keep our schools open, keep our students from having to wonder, will they be placed next year or any year after that? And they need this education to thrive. So many children with or without IEPs are thriving here, and this is not the support that they will get out of their public schools, and we are thinking about their future. LAUSD teachers have even joked about how they're dreading to get kids from charters and filling up their classrooms, basically sounding like it's an inconvenience to them. I have not been able to have a home-cooked meal with my family because of all these constant and random meetings. So I won't stop fighting for my school or their education from the children. The board has the power to fight along with the parents to stop these closures. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, we're going to move. The next site that has a speaker lined up is at KIPP Illuminar. I apologize, I do not have the name of the individual speaking, but I will go ahead and unmute, and your 2 minutes will begin once you start talking. So just a moment. Okay, you should be all set at KIPP Illuminar.
Dear KIPP board members, my name is Sarah Jin, and I sit here at KIPP Illuminar watching these children grow and thriving. I am a parent of KIPP Wadare. Today, as we all know, a recommendation will be made by and the AHA committee. I'm here today as a KIPP Wadare parent to demand the board votes no on such recommendation for KIPP Wadare and involve the community by having an open public meeting related to enrollment issues and school closure. We trusted KIPP SoCal community, and today is a pivotal point, not just for us, but for you, KIPP SoCal as well. Your decision today will impact how we move forward, either with KIPP SoCal or the latter. Our small community of KIPP Wadare parents have done so much of advocacy, planning, meeting, organizing, as well as investigating. Imagine what our mighty group can be for KIPP Wadare. In the future, you must involve parties when a significant change and decisions are made. This was a disservice, deceitful, malicious, and goes against what your organization stands for. How would your organization handle truth we haven't covered, the incompetence of handling this situation, leaving our poderosos out to dry? Your neighboring schools are not a guaranteed entry, and parents are clear, we do not want to be in the Montebello Unified School District. We need KIPP Wadare to win for our Montebello community. I urge you all to vote no on closing KIPP Wadare and hold your CEO, Angela Martinez, accountable for improperly handling this situation. My husband just spoke earlier. He does work for JPL, and they do not give up. They do not give on any missions. And I urge you to not give up on our children, our poderosos, and our schools. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. At this time, we will be moving to the speaker at KIPP Raices, Chai Montoya. So I will get that set up. Okay, for our team at KIPP Raices, you're able to begin your comment.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Che Montoya, parent of a first-year student at KIPP Wadare. We've been in the Wadare community for just a short time, but in that time, we have come to appreciate the unique qualities that make Wadare a fit for my child's social and academic development. We chose KIPP Wadare based on glowing recommendations from a family friend and the glowing promise of a future site to house our students. The decision was not made lightly, and we were confident that our commitment to remain at Wadare would be both appreciated and respected. The recent news of the recommendation to close KIPP Wadare and two other locations due to enrollment issues has left me deeply concerned and upset. It is disheartening that my child may lose the opportunity to learn and grow in this exceptional environment. I'm here to advocate for our children, the incredible staff, teachers, and school leadership at KIPP Wadare. Their dedication to our children's educational and social growth is one that I have never seen and experienced at other schools. I earnestly request that this board considers tabling the recommendation to close Kip Poder so we can explore viable solutions together to ensure the sustainability of Kip Poder. I fear that if the board proceeds with this recommendation, you will not be only losing wonderful students, future scholars, wonderful staff and teachers, but you will be losing a huge community of advocates for this charter school. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Per public comment protocol, as we said, speakers, you know, originally it's 3 minutes, and then however, speakers may be given less time depending on the number of individuals who express interest in addressing the board. In that vein, as we did decrease the time, we are going to go ahead and move forward with our wait list for speakers. So we will start that process here at our primary location, and then we will circle back to our school sites that have speakers on the wait list. So our first speaker here is Jessica Ruiz.
Good afternoon, my name is Jessica Ruiz. I am a current parent of Kipo Mesa, and I do have one student in seventh grade. At the moment, I am working as a concerned member of the community regarding the recent school closures and the lack of transparency surrounding these decisions. As a community deeply committed to the principles of anti-racism and collective involvement, I believe it is crucial to address certain issues that impact students, family, and staff. While we are appreciative of the efforts of Kipsoka anti-racism and community-based institutions, we have noticed a gap in communication, inclusively concerning school closures. It is our desire to be informed proactively such as decisions, understanding the rationale behind it, and comprehend their impact on their students, families, and government. KIPP has always sought the support of parents in advocating for various policies, including renewals and matter of affecting our students' welfare. However, the recent lack of transparency surrounding school closure has left the community feeling excluded from crucial decision-making processes. Additionally, I seek clarity on future closures, knowing which other schools might be affected in the upcoming year will help us better understand and prepare for potential change within our education landscape. As a concerned member of this community, I also believe that transparency is fundamental and fostering a supportive environment within our education institute. I respectfully urge the Board of Directors to consider implementing more transparent communication channels, ensuring that community members are adequately involved in decisions that impact our education systems. Ultimately, I feel that recent closures may have been perceived more as a business decision rather than a community-driven choice, which runs contrary to our shared values. I am hopeful that our concerns will be taken into account and eagerly anticipated.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Irene Chavez.
Hi, I yield my time to this gentleman here.
So I'm a parent of a student here at Kipo Ned, and we were given the chance to join KIPP back in August. And the sad part about this is that we weren't warned and weren't let know that schools were closed down after a year. You know, I had friends that I recommended the school to, that told them how great the school was, the community, the teachers, the staff. So I had a friend leave an actual job to come to this school, Kipo Ned, and work there on October 17th. And she wasn't warned either for the next year moving down. Now she had lost ties with the other school, working at this school. And in general, I was telling, you know, Angela and Ms. Rana in our meeting recently is that, you know, us as the people, you know, we have ties to the community. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to those cities in the dark or in early nights, but it's pretty scary out there. But we have ties to the actual city to, you know, make this school be more known, you know, not just, you know, by you guys and the marketing team. It's different from the marketing team, because, you know, I'm a visit as well. But when you're actually in the city, in the dark and the cold out there, it's different. So we can actually get this enrollment number up if that's the actual issue that you're saying, you know, back to back. So if you guys can give us that chance to help you guys out, to get them open up, give us money, we can do funding and fundraising, kind of things, help the school out. We don't want to leave the school. Now they get those options to, you know, the lottery and one-on-ones, but we don't want to close these schools that are closing down, you know, especially KIPP Olev that we were one so last minute, just last Monday. And I know for a fact, having friends that have tried to hurt themselves, a lot of teachers and parents and kids and staff are going to be affected mentally in that sense of trying to hurt themselves. And I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys are going to want to take responsibility when it goes out to the press that someone was hurt, et cetera, because of this specific issue. So hopefully you guys give us a chance and give us parents a chance to save our own school. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final speaker here in the primary meeting location is Leslie Ann.
Hello, my name is Leslie Alvis, and I'm a proud adoptive grandmother of a KIPP Olev second grade student. I chose KIPP Olev, leaving Montebello School District Elementary. My grandson was in the early intervention special education classroom. During the pandemic, they dismissed his IEP, which then led me to KIPP Olev. KIPP Olev since kindergarten, first grade, and now in his second grade, has not only exceeded beyond their house, their needs, their support, their love, and encouragement for my grandson, but they make him feel safe, secure, wanted, and boost his self-esteem on the daily. He is welcomed every day with a hug, and embraced by all kids, KIPP Olev staff. I am an early childhood educator, and I work at various different districts, nonprofits, and some private schools. I have done my research and investigation over the past week and a half. I was told by Ms. Wicker in the parent meeting that the board has recommended the closure, and that you have tried with LACO, but LACO does not approve of a single entity to combine all three KIPP schools that you want to close down into one. I made the proposal to her and to the board to establish a new building, merge the three KIPP schools that you want to close down, and rename it. Call it a new KIPP. And you will have your existing data. You will meet your needs as far as how many children are enrolled. And you will have happy students that are currently embraced by the KIPP vision and their parents and community.
Thank you very much for your comment.
If you proceed with the closure, I would like your attorney's information because I will follow a lawsuit. And I welcome all parents to join on board with me. Thank you.
Okay. We have someone at KIPP Generations. Just a moment. I'm just trying to confirm which attendee to unmute to provide that comment. Okay. No, we do not have anyone on the wait list there. So we're going to move on. We have our final two speakers on the wait list from KIPP Olev. So. Okay, for the KIPP Olev team, we can go ahead with speaker number one.
Good afternoon. My name is Ellie, mostly known as Mom. I'm a mom. And I'm here today to ask you to delay your vote on closing our schools. I don't want to bore you with another story. You heard them all, and they're all true. I'm going to go straight to the point. I speak for families that are either shy or intimidated by this whole process. We felt ambushed and lied to. There's no time to cry over spilled milk. Let's find solutions. I want to help you, SoCal, keep SoCal, find solutions. I want to help you see the bigger picture instead of destroying these three communities and take advantage. Right now, you can take advantage of and absorb other schools into one and make it better. Make better choices when it comes to board meetings. We want to keep people there. Postpone your vote. Give us a fair chance, and we will prove what are we made of. After you vote today, regardless of your decision, here are a few things that I want you to always consider moving forward. Always. No more new schools openings with false promises to students, parents, teachers, and staff. Include parent leadership participation and all board meetings. And ultimately, we want full transparency through and through.
Dear members of the school board, my name is Nancy. I am a proud parent and advocate for the incredible school. This school became a pillar support.
Nancy, I'm so sorry. Can you just give us a second here?
Yes.
We just want to make sure that we capture everything. So, okay, go ahead. Thank you so much for your patience.
I am a proud parent and advocate for the incredible school Kipolec. This school became a pillar of support for both my daughter and I and all of our families. The teachers, with their empathy and dedication, provided not only an exceptional education, but also a safe and nurturing environment that helped my daughter and I navigate challenging times. At the same time that I was barely learning to be a single mother, I had the love and support of my little Sophia's teachers to show me that I wasn't alone. I am deeply concerned that revenue and political aspects take precedence over the quality of education. In our underserved communities, it is disheartening to witness schools being evaluated solely on the financial contributions that they can bring, rather than the educational opportunities they provide. It is even more disheartening to learn that the CEO's salary has been increased this year, while the fate of this remarkable school hangs in the balance. We never saw the CEO, Ms. Martinez, provide any effort in person, nor establish any relationship with our students. Yet us as a community, we always showed up. Ms. Martinez didn't recognize my daughter's face as she was used for enrollment flyers. You would think that my little Sophia's big smile would be memorable for someone that actually cared. The teachers go above and beyond to ensure that every student receives the support they need to thrive. I urge you to keep our school open. I urge you to prioritize the well-being and education of our community over financial considerations and an unrealistic 2003 business model that KIPP refuses to update. Let us come together to ensure that this exceptional school continues to thrive and make a difference in the lives of our children. Please don't fail us. Please don't fail our children. They deserve better because they truly are poderosos. Thank you for your time.
Then we have one more.
Thank you. And I believe we have one more speaker from Kipo there. So please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Yunen Soriano. As a parent of a current Kipoder student who is in kinder, and near future Kipoder child who is almost 3 years old, I am saddened and disappointed to hear the recommendation made by KIPP's so-called regional leadership team to permanently close Kipoder. As not just a school, but a tightly knitted Kipoder community and family, we parents know that what KIPP Soka intends to do to close our school is an injustice. We have overcome many challenges as a founding school co-locating at Gascon Elementary, and yet look at us now. Here we are still standing together to advocate for the rights of our children, our students, our school, and our Kipoder teachers and staff. As a school organization and association, KIPP Soka has failed us and want to know how KIPP Soka will be held accountable for the grave mistakes being made by this school's closure process and the lack of transparency by the KIPP Soka leadership regional team. We understand that KIPP Soka leadership is proposing Kipoder's closure due to under-enrollment and permanent facility challenges. However, consider the fact that we were never informed of any concerns with enrollment or potential closures. There was unclear and inconsistent messaging, lack of transparency, incomplete information provided to school administration, and a heartless decision overall. Therefore, in the name of all parents who couldn't be here today, In the name of all those parents who cannot miss work for varying reasons. In the name of parents whose first language is Spanish and cannot advocate with us. And in the name of all Kipoder staff and teachers, our ask today is, number one, vote no on the closure of Kipoder. Number two, revisit and review the data and facts that were provided for this school's closure recommendation. Number three, meet us in the middle. Get to know us, the Kipoder community, the students, the parents, the amazing Kipoder principal, the staff, the teachers, all who have made Kipoder possible to date. Hold KIPP so-called regional and leadership team accountable for the mistakes and lack of organization with this whole process. Thank you and happy holidays.
I believe we have one more speaker from KIPP Poder.
Hola, buenas tardes a todos. Pues voy a hablar en español porque no me puedo aprender el inglés y ustedes disculpen. Yo estoy abogando a favor, como todos los papás, porque nos den la oportunidad. Simplemente les estamos pidiendo tiempo para que trabajemos juntos y podamos seguir manteniendo nuestras escuelas abiertas. Estoy a favor de Equipo D porque me he dado cuenta lo mucho que mi hija ha avanzado en esta escuela. Me he dado cuenta de lo mucho que estos maestros ponen de su dedicación, de su tiempo. Y eso también es amor por los niños y amor por la escuela y amor por la enseñanza. Simplemente les pedimos eso, que se pongan el corazón en la mano a esas personas que van a votar. Ustedes no tienen a sus hijos aquí, pero nosotros sí. Si eso pasara en su escuela, obviamente también, si su escuela es buena, buscarían la manera de que no se cerrara. Solamente les pedimos tiempo y que trabajen junto con nosotros los padres, y lo que quieren es conseguir, no sé, más ingresos para que la escuela siga de pie y siga adelante. Es todo lo que quiero decir, y pues muchas gracias por escucharnos. Pero, por favor, solamente pedimos tiempo y que trabajemos juntos como comunidad, como lo que siempre hemos sido, una comunidad unida siempre va a salir adelante. Muchas gracias.
Gracias por su comentario. At this time, we will move on to our final speaker for public comment time. The speaker is currently at KIPP Pueblo, so just a moment. Okay, Amy Garcia, please go ahead with your comment.
Yes, hi. I'm a mom from KIPP, and we can tell you on and on about stories, but it's like, if we believed in you guys, why can't you guys believe in us? Why didn't you guys give us enough time to, you know, give you guys ideas? I don't feel that you guys did enough effort to keep this schools open. And, you know, if it was you guys on the other end of the stick, if it was you guys losing the school for your children and stuff, how would you feel? How would you react? Would you think, you know, would you be doing the same thing we're doing? I mean, I don't think it's fair. If it was your family, your relatives, your children, you know, wouldn't you want to have a chance to fight for the school to stay open? There were so many things you guys could have done. Flyers, you could have had parents help you guys out to get funds for the schools. And, you know, I think you guys didn't do enough. And, you know, aren't you guys, you know, a person of your word? I know back in the day, who you were was regarding your word. If you said something, you would follow through. And you're contradicting yourself right now, not, you know, giving enough time, you know, taking us into consideration, doing these meetings where all parents are being able to come in. I mean, you have so many parents working to give ideas, to help out. I mean, I think it's just unfair. And just think about it, you know, what would you have done if you were in our shoes? The LED, USD school is what they teach is have your children, you know, way behind. And the KIPP's school and curriculum, I feel, gives a fighting chance to our children. And so, I don't know, just, you know, have it
Thank
in your
you
heart.
Thank you very much for your comment. Your time has passed. Thank you. That's it. So that's everyone for a public comment.
Just to let everybody know what's going to happen. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Board members, come back at 2:40. After this, there's some agenda items not related to the schools that we're going to vote on. After that, Angela and her team are going to present the reasons why they're making the recommendation. In the fashion that you've been very respectful and listening to everybody, I just ask you to be the same when Angela and her team present. I'm sure you're going to disagree, but please be respectful so we can provide. They can provide us that information at that point. The board will engage in discussion. So we're just going to get a quick 10-minute break for everybody. Stretch the legs. Come back in 10 minutes. Thank you.
In case you didn't hear, we're taking a 10-minute break. We will resume our meeting at 2:40 p.m. Thank you.
started. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to the consent agenda. As a reminder, we do not discuss items on the consent agenda. If there are any items on the consent agenda that require clarification, we can remove them and discuss them prior to vote. Are there, from the board, are there any agenda items that you would wish to remove and discuss? Seeing none? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Randy makes a move. Motion is your second.
A second.
John, second. Talin?
Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone, Luis.
Thank you. All right. Motion passes for the consent agenda. All right, voting items. All right. If SoCal, just to let everybody know, we have regular board business that must be addressed during this meeting. We're going through these items before we transition to recommendation on the school closure items. So our first voting item will be presented by Curtis. Curtis, thank you.
Good afternoon, board members. I'm Curtis Watley, the Director of Policy and Authorized Relations here at SoCal. I'm here to introduce a resolution asking for Board President Luis Rodriguez to be given authority to sign this year's compliance monitoring review and certification of both compliance reviews. The compliance monitoring review asks charter school governing boards to sign off on a checklist of compliance requirements that are reviewed in LAUSC oversight visits. This year's oversight visits are already underway and will run through June. In short, the compliance monitoring review asks the board to certify that each school meets compliance requirements in student and staff safety, teacher credentials, board governance, lottery and enrollment procedures, school climate and discipline, stakeholder engagement, special education, and English learner instruction. The authorizer relations team has reached out to the directors of other teams at SoCal to make sure that our schools are compliant or on track to be compliant in these areas. And we are asking the board to vote in favor of authorizing Board Chair Luis Rodriguez to sign each LAUSD-based school's compliance monitoring review. We will then submit each school's compliance monitoring review to LAUSD along with today's board agenda, board minutes, and board agenda approval minutes.
Motion. Second.
I second.
Carlos.
Naeem.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Carlos.
Yes.
Randy.
Yes.
Mel.
Yes.
Phil.
Yes.
Luis.
Yes.
That's everyone.
Motion passes. I'll turn it over now to Kyle. All right.
We met last week with the Finance Committee to review the proposed budget revision for this year. As you're aware, we always, it's our typical practice to revise our budget in the fall once we have clarity on our actual enrollment for the year, once we have clarity on our salaries and staffing costs, and also importantly, to adjust for any changes to the state budget from what was assumed in our original budget. So this is a summary of the revised budget. Just a few things to note. Our revenue, the budgeted revenue is up by about $7.5 million, largely on account of our actual enrollment coming in about 80 students higher than what we had conservatively budgeted across the region. We're also budgeting for additional one-time revenue recognition up about $2.5 million from what was in our original budget. And that's largely due to carryover of ESSER funds from last year. And also the state did not cut the proposed one-time revenue for schools as much as the governor has had signaled in his January and May budget proposals. So we were a little too conservative in our assumptions on the on one-time revenue. And then on the expense side, you see there it's about an increase of $5 million. Salaries actually have come down due to continuing to have a number of vacancies across the region. That's largely offset by the increase in operating services. The largest portion of that increase is due to an assumption that we're going to carry higher substitute teacher costs for the year. And then some, you know, the changes across the region in supplies and materials, increased spending on repairs and maintenance and janitorial services as well. So all in all, the assumption for the year is slightly improved from the original budget we adopted.
We reviewed the budget at the Finance Committee last week and went through a series of questions, but everything was satisfactory.
So we'll be looking for a motion to approve.
Proposal?
Ready?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone, Luis.
Okay. Motion passes.
Okay. The next item is our annual audit. Randy, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So we met, the audit committee met last week with our auditors and with the audit the team internally. They presented the preliminary findings. It was a good process. Very clean, a clean recommendation. Everything looked good. They had good feedback on the process. Two suggestions. Pretty minimal compared to prior years in terms of what needs to be improved in the process. So we've made a lot of progress. They were very complimentary of Kyle and his team. There were two state compliance findings that Kyle will talk about. They were both relatively small and related to some new implementations of programs. And other than that, the committee voted to move the report forward. Here, it's not a final report. We have to wait for them.
So, as Randy mentioned, we got a clean opinion on the overall audit and no findings related to the financial component of the audit or the federal compliance portions. Let me just take 2 minutes to walk through the two findings related to the state compliance programs. The first was related to the unduplicated pupil counts and specifically the free and reduced lunch counts at KIPP Endeavor College Prep. The testing that the auditors did identified one student who was incorrectly classified as eligible for free and reduced price meals. The reason why they do this testing and why it matters is because although currently under state law, all our students actually get free meals, we're still funded on the basis of our percent of students that qualify as low income. And so that's why this testing matters. The error was caused, appears to have been caused by a glitch in the software system that we use to manage eligibility and tracking the students for the lunch program. And so going forward, the team has now instituted an internal control process to manually audit the information in the system. And the impact of this is relatively immaterial. The school will have to forfeit or return almost about $3,700 to the state that was provided to us in excess because of qualifying the student as low income. And then the second finding was related to the transitional kindergarten program. So with the implementation of the expanded TK programs, Last year was the first year that the state enforced a requirement that TK classes, or I should say any classroom with at least one TK student, could not exceed 24 students. And additionally, we have to maintain a ratio of 12 students to one adult in a TK classroom. These rules were not clear to us when we were creating our programmatic plans for last school year and when we were assigning classrooms. And last year, we continued with our historical experience of running combined TK-K classrooms, typically with somewhere between 26 and 30 students. By the time we understood this, we decided it would be too impactful on students' experience, as well as our teachers, to implement fully contained TK classrooms. And so we decided to continue with what we thought would be the best outcome for students. And as a result, we had this finding. We will have to forfeit across these schools, across seven schools, about $254,000. Averages, you know, anywhere between $29,000 and $44,000 per school. It's also important to clarify that we have resolved this for this year. We've across all the schools, or almost all the schools, we've created dedicated TK classrooms that comply with these requirements. So I don't expect this to be an issue going forward. And that's it.
Yeah, the motion before you is, do we have a motion to approve and accept the attached audit of the consolidated financial statements of KIPP SoCal Public Schools for fiscal year 2023?
Motion.
Randy moves. Is there a second?
I'll second. Heather.
Heather? Heather is here for the record.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Luis. Before I do the roll call, I did want to put into the record that board member Heather Lord arrived at 2:48 p.m. I'll move forward with the vote on this. Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone.
The motion passes. Next item.
All right. The last item I have is to get a vote to acknowledge receipt, review, and approval of the first interim reports that we submit to our authorizers of the state. These financial reports outline our year-to-date financial results for every school. Also, comparing those results to our budget, along with a projection for year-end. In your board materials, we supplied the reports for each of our schools across all of our authorizers. And so we're looking simply for a vote to acknowledge receipt, an opportunity to discuss the reports, and then approval. I'm happy to take any questions if you have any questions about the reports as well.
Any questions? No questions. Okay. We have a motion to acknowledge the receipt of the fiscal year 2023-24 first interim reports for the above-mentioned schools, as well as the opportunity to discuss the reports and financial results with KIPP SoCal management. We have a motion. Mel moves. Second. Bill seconds. Belen?
Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Okay. Motion passes. Okay, everybody, we're going to move on to the items that you're all here for. Angela?
So thank you, board members, for being here today, and thank you, families, for engaging in public comment today and in the meetings that we've been having over the last 9 days or so. So before we begin a presentation, I, upon hearing feedback from many stakeholders, I would like to ask the board to pull the voting items for each of the school closures for today. I also ask the board, however, to allow for me and my leadership team to present all of the information as it relates to the recommendation for school closure.
Okay. With that, we will be taking these three voting items off of the agenda.
for a vote today for further consideration at a future board meeting.
Thank you.
So everybody in the audience, we will not be voting today on the school closure for the three schools, but we will be hearing from Angela and her team as to the work that they've done. And again, I appreciate your respect and your attendance here. If you just give Angela and her team the space to present, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Luis, you're up first.
Okay, let me read this out. If SoCal Board of Directors, the CEO and CFO are responsible and accountable to ensure the long-term fiscal sustainability of the organization. As fiduciaries, the Board of Directors must make decisions that will, one, support the fulfillment of the mission and purpose of KIPP SoCal, two, ensure each LEA school is upholding its fiscal obligations and applicable laws and policies, three, ensure that KIPP SoCal and the charter management organization is able to support and sustain the organization.
Okay. So I want to, board members want to make sure before I dig into the recommendation, just want to clarify something that is very unique and challenging for charter organizations compared to district schools. So while a district like LAUSD is one single LEA, for all of its 1,300 schools, each of our schools at KIPP SoCal is its own unique LEA. So this means that we cannot move revenue from a highly enrolled school to support an under-enrolled school, and it means that we cannot directly transfer students from one school to another, which would more easily allow us to a true consolidation of schools. It's a challenge that is unique to charter schools, and it does not provide us with a lot of flexibility. And so therefore, we're under significantly more pressure to ensure that the enrollment at each of our individual schools is sufficient to sustainably offer its full program required in its charter compared to district schools. So I wanted to start with that because it is a unique challenge to charter schools. So I first want to begin with the recognition that this recommendation is not made lightly. I am not looking forward to presenting a case for school closures. And because we love and honor our students and teammates, the content of this presentation will be challenging. None of the content shared today is intended to discredit any of the hard work or commitment and dedication of our students, families, and team members that have created unique communities. Our intention is to share the evidence that we have that supports my recommendation. This recommendation, while anguishing, is in service of the whole of KIPP SoCal Public Schools, ensuring a stable and high quality experience for 10,000 students and 8,000 alumni. And as a public school system, our organization's strength is grounded in our ability to sustain fully grown schools through federal and state funding, not donations and grants. And this is contingent on each school meeting enrollment targets to support the KIPP program. And as I will present today, the evidence is clear that KIPP SoCal must make the difficult decision to close schools. By doing so, we can shift to strengthening our organization by investing in improvement and innovation instead of investing to maintain the status quo. I want to provide some context on the opening of our school, of these particular schools. So we're going to go back and review that. KIPP SoCal had a strategic plan, which some of you remember, that a growth plan to open 20 schools by 2020. So starting in 2017, based upon a strategic growth analysis, our school waitlist demand, we began the process to open schools in the Southeast cities, Montebello and Gardena. These plans were made and approved before the world changed on us in March of 2020. Since 2020, as Pueblo continued to grow, followed by the opening of Poder and Generations, all three schools have entered into a cycle of compounding low enrollment, meaning because the schools have fallen well below enrollment levels required to sustain the school, they must begin to far exceed their demonstrated ability to recruit new students each year. And unfortunately, we have evidence that the conditions to improve do not exist and enrollment recovery has become insurmountable. All three schools and their openings have faced challenges that will continue through the foreseeable future. Prop 39 allocations that are distributed over multiple sites. So Kip Poder and Pueblo are both across two campuses. And Pueblo has the potential to grow across three, have to be across three campuses if the school were to continue. Prop 39 allocations are also under threat from new district policy, and this particularly impacts generations. Prop 39 allocations present a hostile location or hostile environment. This is particularly acute at Poder in the last 2-3 years. There's also broken feeder patterns. There is no longer an upper school for Pueblo, so students in the fourth grade do not have an upper school to matriculate into, and there is no lower school feeder for generations within the next 7 to 10 years, meaning that, we start at one grade level at a time, so going from, like, it takes time to go to kinder, TK through a fourth grade to then matriculate into fifth grade, so that feeder pattern is many years off. We also have evidence that there is an inability to convert waitlist demand from neighboring KIPP schools. And this is particular for Pueblo, who is in the southeast cities next to Corazon and Comienza, and Poder, which is proximate to KIPP Raices and KIPP Illumina Academy. There also the inability to develop permanent facilities for all three schools, and we are all very aware of the building project obstruction that Pueblo faced. The pattern of low enrollment and the fixed barriers to enrollment recovery outlined here have reached a critical point for the schools and our organization, and it is with that I make the following recommendation to the board. The long-term sustainability of KIPP Pueblo, KIPP Poder, and KIPP Generations is untenable due to 4 things. 1, significant under-enrollment. 2, challenges operating on Prop 39 sites. 3, challenges in securing permanent facilities. 4, unsustainable financial subsidies that are all unique to these three schools. So therefore, I do recommend to the KIPP SoCal Board of Directors, to which I know we are not voting today, the closure of KIPP Pueblo Unido, KIPP Poder, and KIPP Generations at the end of this current school year. To continue the status quo of operating KIPP Pueblo, KIPP Poder, and KIPP Generations would require significant cuts to staffing, compromising the KIPP program, require unsustainable subsidies, and place KIPP SoCal as a whole at risk of financial instability in future years. Additionally, to develop permanent facilities for each of these schools, which would require an investment of at least $25 million per school, including $15 to $20 million in debt per school, is fiscally imprudent when the current combination of enrollment and waitlist fails to demonstrate that the schools could grow to the full enrollment that would be required to service the debt associated with the permanent facilities. To understand the drivers and evidence behind my recommendation, Kyle and I will be presenting on the following components: enrollment, Prop 39, permanent facilities, philanthropy, and subsidies. Before I hand it over to Kyle to discuss enrollment, I will provide an overview of our recruitment efforts. Since fiscal year 21, we have substantially upped our resources and efforts in the marketing space, in our regional supports, and our school-based strategies. This past recruitment cycle, we specifically focused on our schools who were under-enrolled, including these three schools. Many of these were new approaches. So we had school leader vision videos, some were enhanced strategies such as more and more paid media, and all marketing had specific targeted campaigns for each individual school. We also had regional support that included biweekly recruitment meetings with school leadership, associate director of recruitment and advocacy, and community engagement managers, who reviewed supports and tracked progress on enrollment goals, providing intervention activities to boost applications and assign key owners from both the region and the school. We hired and trained, hiring and training of the school-specific student recruiters, providing curated lists of recruitment events, parades, health fairs, giveaways for school-based recruiters to attend, phone banking campaigns to gather referrals, regional team members conducting canvassing efforts with and for schools, and regional team-sponsored family referral contests and giveaways. Unfortunately, despite increased recruitment efforts, enrollment at our three schools has not improved or met necessary targets to run a KIPP SoCal program and continue to not be on a sustainable path. I'm going to hand it over to Kyle to talk about enrollment trends.
Thanks, Angela. Before we get into the enrollment specifically at each school and some of the challenges we face, I thought it'd be helpful and important to provide a overview of the context that we're operating in and how that has changed over recent years. I'm sure you've read headlines over the past couple of years about declining public school enrollment across the country. Unfortunately, here in Los Angeles, we're not immune to that. And in fact, Los Angeles County has seen among the highest rates of decline in enrollment across major school districts nationwide. This table shows, particularly that middle column, the five-year change in enrollment at many major school districts in LA County. We've circled the two that are related to the schools that we're talking about today. There you see that LA Unified has experienced a drop in enrollment of 13% over the last 5 years. And Montebello Unified has actually seen a larger decrease in enrollment of 21%. If we look closer at LAUSD in particular, being such a large district, the district itself breaks itself down into local districts. KIPP Pueblo Unido operates in the East local district, and KIPP Generations operates in the South district. Here you'll see that the changes in enrollment over the last 5 years in both the East and the South districts are pretty similar to the district at large, dropping 14 and 12% respectively. But when we look at this more granular level, you can see that the census data from 2010 to 2020 shows us that in the East District in particular, and this is where Pueblo Unido is located, the school age population dropped by almost a quarter, dropped by 24%. And we're starting to see that, you know, trickle into the schools the youngest group of that is now becoming kindergarten students. So this is some of the broader headwinds that we're facing.
Additionally, the superintendent of LAUSD recently stated earlier this week that they will be instituting a hiring freeze and will be exploring closing under-enrolled schools and citing some of the same reasons that we're citing as, you know, the inability to run a program due to low enrollment. And they'll be looking at high schools first. So even the second largest district in the country is acknowledging this decline in enrollment and the impact on the programs that they're able to serve.
As we start to look at KIPP SoCal, unfortunately, we haven't been immune to these larger trends in LA County. This chart shows the bars, the columns are enrollment from the year prior to the pandemic, so the 19-20 school year through this school year. And so what you can see here in the blue line is our wait list. Okay, so you can see that even as we have added five schools across our network over this period, our wait list has dropped 42%. So we've seen our wait list drop by over 2,000 students over this period. And again, this is as we've added five schools. So you'd think that our wait list should be increasing as we have more schools to generate demand from. Additionally, you can see that our enrollment has only increased marginally over the last couple of years. It's increased just over 300 students. Over the same period of time, with the number of additional grade levels that we've enrolled in our schools, we would have expected, or I should say, like our potential for new students increased by 700 And that's not to mention filling all the already under-enrolled seats, but we added 700 new seats. So we have not filled even half of the additional capacity that we've added over the last 2 years. So in trying to understand this, I think it's important to look at what's happening at our entry grade levels. So for an elementary school, it's TK and kindergarten. Traditionally, we've considered it kindergarten because it's only really this year that the TK program has started to expand to even be one classroom, maybe two classrooms full of students. And so when we look at our kindergarten enrollment, you can see that it's declined 12.5% across the past 2 years. And it is true when you look at these numbers on an absolute basis that the additional TK students helps make up this gap on a nominal basis, but that hides over the problem we're going to have in future years. Because if we can't, if you think about it, elementary school that is expected to have four classrooms of kindergarten students, but now only has two or three because of under enrollment. If we don't find another classroom or two classrooms full of first graders the subsequent year, that under enrollment is going to carry through the school over the next 4 years. And if next year's kindergarten classroom repeats, we're going to have the same cycle until each of our elementary schools enrollment, you know, drops by, 100 or more students over the coming year. So I just want to highlight that we shouldn't deceive ourselves at thinking TK is going to solve or has solved this problem or will solve this problem. So this is another sign that we're seeing across the region that we're not immune to this softening demand.
Just to add about the TK, because of our current schools weren't designed to include TK classrooms, so our space really constrains us to how many TK classrooms we can offer because we don't have enough space to offer, say, four homerooms of TK in all of our buildings.
So as we look at, presented the fifth grade information a little different here, but as we look at fifth grade, which is the entry grade for our middle schools, we see some similarly troubling warning signs. So here you can see that over the past 2 years, we've only increased our number of fifth grade enrollment by 14 students. At the same time, we've added two new fifth grade cohorts. Last year, we added the fifth grade cohort at Generations. And this year, we added the fifth grade cohort at Compton Upper School. So that should have increased, or that increased our potential of fifth graders of 250 students. So while we've added the potential capacity again for 250 kids, we've only added actually, or we've only increased enrollment 14. And so again, that's a clear sign that we're seeing softening demand. And because this is the entry grade, again, without this problem being addressed, we're going to see it continue to trickle through and impact schools.
And that 14 students doesn't even fill one classroom of fifth graders.
And the finally kind of contextual piece that, or one of the last contextual pieces that I want to show for the region is how things are looking this year currently for our outlook for next year. And so this chart shows the year-on-year comparison of our applications for kindergarten seats across all of our lower schools. Regionally, kindergarten applications are down 6% year-on-year, and this is through December 10th. So last year, December through December 10th, this year through December 10th. The yellow line across is just the median number of applications across all of the schools. The drop in applications is despite the fact that we've increased our marketing spend this year by 269%. So we've invested significantly more into the marketing, and yet we've still seen this decline. When we look at Poder and Pueblo specifically, they both have about a third fewer applications this or for kindergarten for next year than they had at the same time last year. And if we look closer at the data, only about one third of the applications for both of those schools are unique applications. So that means two thirds of the applications that both Poder and Pueblo have received are students that have also applied to other KIPP schools. And historically at these schools, we've seen about a one third conversion rate of, so about one third of the students that apply to these schools or in kindergarten have historically enrolled, which is pretty consistent. I mean, it correlates very well with the unique applications. Okay, so to put this into perspective, in order to fill only three homerooms in each of these schools, three kindergarten homerooms in each of these schools, we estimate that we would need about 260 applications, kindergarten applications at Poder for next year, and about 227 applications at Pueblo. And both of them have received fewer than 25 applications to date for next year. But I just want to show the immense challenge we have if we're talking about not only meeting our enrollment, what we did last year, which was drastically under where we need to be, but to show recovery. And we'll get more into the case for each school in a minute. And looking at fifth grade, we see somewhat better trends with applications actually being up by about a third year on year across the region. And we do see an increase at Generations. But if we dig deeper, we also see that Generations does have a very steep road to climb. So looking at Generations applications for fifth grade, we see that about one quarter of them this year are unique to Generations. So again, about three quarters of the applications we've received are from students who have also applied to other KIPP schools. And historically, about Generations has about a 40% conversion rate. So about 40% of the students that apply will end up or have ended up enrolling in Generations. So this means that just to get back to the two classrooms that we had last year in fifth grade, we need approximately 150 applications. Again, that's our approximation or estimation. We currently have 41 applications. In order to get to four classrooms, which would be full enrollment for our model, we need approximately 300 fifth grade applications. So just show that and to provide perspective on the challenge that lies ahead to recover our enrollment at these schools compared to where we are today. The other contextual piece of information that I think is important is to understand how the experience with growing Pueblo lower and Poder lower has diverged significantly from the experience that we've had in opening and growing all of our prior lower schools, all of our prior elementary schools. For the sake of being able to understand the chart here, I've only shown the growth rollout of Compton Lower as a comparison, but all of the prior ones were quite similar to Compton Lower. Compton Lower is the school that opened most recently prior to Poder and Pueblo. Compton opened in the fall of 2018. Pueblo opened the next year in fall of 2019, and Poder followed in 2021. And you see that Compton also opened on a Prop 39 site. and you'll see that it exceeded or nearly met our enrollment expectations each of the 5 years that it was rolling out its kindergarten through fourth grade. And you can see how the divergence that we're experiencing when we look at Pueblo and Poder. In Poder in particular, you can see that we did meet our expectations the first year, but since then in the second and third year, we have seen a drastic decline in terms of our enrollment. It's a percent of the what we would expect in terms of achieving the model that we need to be able to operate the school sustainably. And then finally, I think it's worth mentioning and highlighting what we've seen with regards to how a permanent facility does or does not impact enrollment. First off, let me state that we believe strongly that having a permanent facility is important for our students. It's critical to creating the learning environment that our students need and that we want them to have. So it is certainly our goal that every school would have its own facility that we've developed to call it home. However, I think it's a false belief that a facility will solve enrollment challenges. And our experience with all of the facilities that we've opened, I think, demonstrates that. So this chart shows, I've tried to show our enrollment, again, is a percent of what we'd expect to our model prior to move-in, the year at move-in, and then the 2 years after move-in. And you see there that essentially each school that was meeting enrollment expectations prior to moving into its permanent facility more or less continued to meet its enrollment expectations. The only case where that's diverged wildly is Promesa, which moved into their facility 2 years ago. And you can actually see how their enrollment has dropped precipitously since the move to their permanent facility. The schools that moved into their permanent facility that were off track, drastically off track with enrollment prior to moving in, they've made marginal improvements, but they've really stagnated, and they've come nowhere near meeting the enrollment that the facility could hold. And so I think this is really important to understand, because I think as an organization, we often believe and talk about, which I think is a bit of a false hope and false expectation, that the facility is going to solve the enrollment problem. Again, I want to state very clearly, we believe the facility is very important for creating the environment we want for our students, but I think it's a false belief that it is the condition that will solve enrollment. All right. Should I pause for any questions?
Yeah.
Are there any questions, I guess, on that? That's the end of kind of the like regional and context setting. And now the next part will be diving into the schools specifically.
At the heart of this is the recruitment issue, Kyle. And you had some important data in here. You said their applications are down 33%, for example. This is despite increasing our marketing by 269% over the same time period. Can you just dimensionalize a little bit further? Are we deploying all the same proven tactics? Are we investing at the same level? I just want to make sure I'm not missing something in terms of recruiting for these three schools relative to the others.
Yes. So we're from like a media and marketing perspective, we are creating new campaigns and videos and that we've never done before in terms of get our media up. You know, as we talk to this is you can imagine enrollment's a challenge across the United States, where our KIPP cousins, as we like to call them, have collaborators together. And what we find is that, you know, marketing outreach is like the number one, those click yeah. rates. So having more and more media, paid media ads, campaigns, et cetera. We're investing in like billboards and banners and all those sorts of things that we haven't had to do. Single sites have done it 5-10 years ago, but as of late. And then what the regional recruitment team, when we identified the schools that were under enrolled, we call them heart schools, had specific strategies and support where our associate director of student recruitment met biweekly with the school leadership team, the operations team there, with our ACE managers, our advocacy community engagement managers. So every week, what are the events that we're going to canvas? What are the strategies we're going to deploy? And track those every single week. So, and we have, you know, as a management team, have access to all those trackers, looking at what the progress is. And you know, engaging in our families, family referral campaigns, all those giveaways, all those sorts of pieces have, you know, we've upped our efforts. You know, the pandemic year was the shift and like doing the recruitment was different.
Yeah.
But since then, we have increased our recruitment efforts more than we've ever done before.
Got it. So all the same tactics, but even more volume than in the past.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Can you explain the concept? If I'm not understanding right, something like weight events. It just seems that that is almost inconsistent with the fact of under-enrolling.
That's a good question. So the data that I was showing there is regionally. So it's across in aggregate across all of the schools. What if I showed you the waitlist by school, what you'd see is, you know, somewhat large, in some cases very large waitlists at schools that are fully enrolled and don't have any seats. And the schools that are under-enrolled that have capacity, generally with a wait list of zero. I mean, in some cases, there might be a wait list of, less than 10 kids or a handful of kids that for one reason or another, either perhaps the grade they're in, maybe that grade actually is at capacity or the number of classrooms we have. But so does that answer your question? I think that...
I assume.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be instructive to see a list of the waitlist for school or for region or whatever.
Yeah, we could provide that in a next meeting. I think what I was actually in a bit, I'll show you one school. Kipra Isis is an example of what we've seen with their waitlist, and I think showing that is, I mean, I'll say it's alarming. Like it is. It is shocking to see what has changed with their wait list at a school that's been around as long as it has with all of the conditions favoring, you know, strong demand. But that's a good question, Phil.
We have a sense of, we're talking about Poder and Pueblo Unido and, you know, only a third of the applications for St. Kindergarten for each of them are unique. Do you have a sense of the overlap between the two schools?
Between those two schools.
For kindergarten, specifically.
I don't know, Jen, would you know that?
Is it significant?
I'm guessing it's fairly low.
Okay.
My only because of the, I mean, they're somewhat proximate to one another, but yeah. Not immediate. We would tend to see significant overlap between Poder and Raíces because of the proximity. And maybe Poder, Raíces, and Illuminar. And then we tend to see a significant overlap between, say, for example, Pueblo, Corazon in Southgate, and Comienza and Huntington Park, because those are all three schools in the Southeast cities because of their proximity to one another. And, I mean, occasionally we'll see beyond that, but that's kind of the clustering that we would tend to see.
Okay.
Yeah. So just looking at Poder in particular, like it looks like 21 and 22, I'm looking at TK and kindergarten together. Like the very next year, that drop.
Right,
I'm sorry, I'm in the cohort sizes be low expectations. But
can we get there in a little while?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
We're going to talk about the three schools distinctly and separately and their enrollment. Okay. Yeah, this was the, you know, for us to frame the overall conditions, the external conditions, and then what the trends we're seeing as a whole at KIPP SoCal before we drill into the individual schools.
Can I ask one more? I just have a question. With all of the increase in spend, marketing spend towards recruitment, but it hasn't been effective, has there been any surveying of, and maybe that's for later that you're going to get to, of what thing or how it's not being effective or why it's not being effective?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. To the marketing team could speak more directly, but we monitor click rates, all the conversion rates, where people are looking, et cetera. And, you know, understanding like why if people aren't fully applying or doing those sorts of pieces is something that we have to look into. But what's interesting is that when you look at like, as if you look at the application so far this year, and the unique enrollments and historical like attrition that's been happening for the three schools is that off now that Raíces has a lower wait list, right? They're calling more students off the wait list. And many of those students are unfortunately like moving from Poder to Raíces when they get called. And so there's the, you know, in thinking about what we need to understand is this duplicate kind of enrollment piece around what are families like real first choice and what are the drivers behind, you know, the schools that they are selecting. And so that's something that we're trying to uncover so that our schools don't end up cannibalizing each other. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Duplicate enrollments, are they often multiple KIPP schools or do they tend to be like a KIPP school, a Alliance school?
No, this is just unique, like duplicate enrollments are interests between our own KIPP schools.
That's the only thing we're aware.
Yeah.
So they could be have other applications.
Correct. They could be at Aspire, they could be at, you know, other charter options, local options in the area. But so we are able to track that data internally for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think one point that's worth making is I don't know, John, that we can say, I know that what I've presented makes it feel as if the marketing spend has been ineffective. I don't know that we could conclude that in totality. When we look at interest forms across all grade levels, across all of our schools, it's up about 25% versus a year ago. So I think that signals like it is having some positive impact. But when you look at kindergarten, and part of why I'm dwelling on kindergarten is I think kindergarten is the bellwether for what's coming, right? And so I think we face a significant headwind because of some of those demographic shifts that it's clear like the marketing has not been enough to overcome that. Right. But and that's in that kindergarten in particular is in contrast to what we're seeing. If you look at the interest forms across all grade levels, does that make sense?
And all schools.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Just even looking at KIPP Raíces again is like our example. This a national blue ribbon school. It's over 15 years old. It's the first KIPP elementary school in California. And has consistent academic performance for the last 15 years. And their kindergarten apps at this point this year are down 27. So it's compared to last year. And so, you know, kindergarten really is, like Kyle's saying, a bellwether.
But it mirrors the demographics.
And his, yeah, it mirrors the demographics.
Okay. Thank you for those questions. So now I'm going to dive into each school specifically. And I want to reiterate what Angela said at the beginning. Like this is hard to present because in some case I feel like I'm a litigator against our own school, and this is not what I want to be. I'm just trying to present like the facts as we see them. And I think we have a responsibility to honestly wrestle with the evidence. So last year at this time, in the December board meeting, you'll recall we were talking about what to do with Pueblo Unido. And it was quite clear, I think irrefutably clear, that there was not sufficient enrollment demand at the upper school and the conditions did not warrant continuing with that. And so we, the board made the decision to do the material revision to eliminate the grades 5th through 8th. But at the same time, we, Angela, I, and others made the case for keeping the lower school open. And part of that case was because we thought they had stable conditions to improve the enrollment situation and financial situation of the school. The school leader was not changing. We were pretty confident we were going to get the same facilities. Well, we knew half of it was staying the same because it's a lease we had for multiple years. And we were quite confident that the school district would give us the same Prop 39 site.
There also was 100% teacher retention.
Teacher retention, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the relationship stayed constant with families. So we laid out a case that we thought all of that would allow us to recover enrollment somewhat. And if we could get to 3 fully enrolled homerooms in kindergarten through 4th grade, along with 1 TK class, we thought we could get the school to a break-even point. And that's represented, the enrollment piece of that is represented by the target case there. Unfortunately, with all of those conditions in our favor that Angela outlined, and despite adding 4th grade, so we finally, that was like the last year of growing the school, so we added 4th grade, we only saw an increase in enrollment of 14 students at the school. I think that's important to revisit because, again, I was sitting in this almost exact same seat making the case for why I thought the school should stay open because I thought that we had the conditions to recover enrollment. And unfortunately, you know, we're here today to show that there's no evidence that occurred. If anything, if you kind of average enrollment across the number of grade levels we're offering, we went backwards, right? Even though we added 14 students. This one's a little, let me see if I can, we have this slide a couple of times, so let me see if I can orient everyone to it successfully. So the columns here sum up to our total enrollment each year for Pueblo Unido. The different colors are the grade levels that constitute enrollment each year. Obviously, is the reason there's more grade level or more colors as we head to this school year is because we've added a grade level each school year. You can see that for the first 2 years, we had our cohort sizes at or exceeding what we wanted to see. So then we were running a combined TKK classroom. And so we would generally want to see a combined TKK enrollment of 112 kids. And then we'd want 112 kids in first grade, which is represented by the orange section. And you see, we met that. Again, we met it in 21-22. And then in last year, with the challenging news that we weren't going to be able to develop the facility, because of the lawsuit that was filed to challenge it and ruled against the city of Cudahy, combined with the Prop 39 situation we were assigned, we saw a large decrease in enrollment. And you see there how the cohort size shrunk. Again, we thought the conditions were going to stabilize and we could improve that. But you see here, so that the arrows are trying to indicate for example, the red to the orange is the kindergartners going to first grade. right? And so you'd hope if we didn't lose a lot of students, at a minimum, those numbers would stay constant. But obviously, to recover enrollment to full capacity, we have to see growth. And in the case of Pueblo, you can see that for the first through fourth grade cohorts, or the incoming first through fourth grade, all of those cohorts shrunk year to year. They showed no growth. The only one that showed growth, so to speak, was the cohort going from TK to kindergarten. But if you really look at that, we added 20 kindergartners. We were not even able to add one full classroom of new to us kindergarten students. So I just want to highlight like the propensity of the challenge that we're facing when we see what's happening at Pueblo Unido. And again, Carlos, you asked a question about the adjacent, you know, like where the duplicate things may be. I don't have the number to show you, but Comienza and Corazon, which are somewhat proximate to have fairly strong wait lists. We're not seeing that trickle over to the enrollment at Pueblo Unido, unfortunately.
And we don't share our wait lists with the other schools. So Pueblo utilizes the wait list of Corazon and Comienza to, you know, call families that are waiting to get into a KIPP school to see if they would want to come to Pueblo. And that did not happen. And so that we use that strategy across our schools. You know, we make sure that we're not, again, like letting our schools get to a full enrollment, but once you're stable, sharing your wait list so that those families can have an option to get into another KIPP school. And we're not seeing that transfer that people attending the school, even though there's space available.
Comienza, for example, in October, had a kindergarten wait list of 60 students. And that's Comienza. And Corazon had a wait list of 47 students in October.
How is Pueblo Unido, how is it located? It's on two different campuses?
Yeah.
Pueblo Unido is on two. The TK through first grade are on the private site that we lease from a church. And that's where it's been since day one in Maywood. And then the second, third, fourth grade is co-located with the LAUSD school.
So where do these students go? Because they must have gone somewhere between they left the school, but they can go out of the city, or do they go to LAUSD, or do they go?
We track that.
We track that, yeah. Okay. We do track that. And so we, you know, I'm looking at actually Pueblo, you know, lost 63 students from you know, August 2022 to June 2023. So we have the ability to understand, and we can look up to see if they've enrolled in other schools in California. We have the ability to do that, but if they've moved out of state, we can't track that sort of piece. But this is the great question that a lot of people are asking is where did the children go if they're not enrolling in schools? And that's where everyone trying to understand that. Like we understand a lot of moves. People are moving out of state. We are getting CUME requests from Oklahoma. We are getting CUME requests. This means those public schools asking for files. Texas, moving to Central Valley of California for the cost of living. And also, you know.
Specifically for this one, do we know roughly how many left the region versus how many stayed in the region just as left at a different school?
I can look. Let me take a look. I'll look this up while someone else has a question. Or we can keep going.
Yeah, why don't we move to so this is the what we're seeing at Pueblo. And so moving to Poder. So like I mentioned earlier, the first year that Poder opened, we were able to enroll 112 students. We didn't have any wait list beyond that, or not any meaningful one at least, but we did meet that target of 112 students, which we were quite enthusiastic about. Unfortunately, as we've added first grade and added second grade, we have not seen growth in enrollment keeping up with the potential new seats that we have created here. The gap there, so like the blue area is the theoretical capacity or the potential for enrollment that our school model would have. So for example, we'd ideally have 360 kids when we have TK classroom plus three other grade levels. But as we've expanded, we've only seen an increase in total enrollment of 92 students over the last 2 years. Now, it can be said that this isn't like a fair way to look at it because Poder doesn't have enough classrooms to seat 360 kids. And that's true. And we have a wait list of zero students, and we don't have a wait list. And so I think I would feel better about the gap if you could take the total enrollment plus the wait list, you know, some part of the wait list, to demonstrate that we had demand to fully enroll the school if the space was available. But I'm going to get back to the
space. How much do we actually have space
for? I'm going to get to that because I think that's also really important to look at. But again, as we think about, I guess why this is important, as we think about developing a permanent facility for Poder and the amount of debt that's required to do that and the debt service that's going to entail, we can only afford to pay that debt service if a school is fully enrolled or, you know, approximately fully enrolled. And this shows you that if we were to move into a permanent facility, the gap that we have to make in terms of recovering enrollment. And I'm going to also show you how the cohort sizes have changed year to year at Poder, just so that we can understand how much of a challenge it's going to be to recover enrollment from where we've gotten over the last 2 years.
Kyle, before you do that, look, this, just I'm trying to visualize this. The four grades right now,
three grades plus one classroom with TK.
That's my mind for. Okay. So all on the same campus, or I heard earlier two.
So two apparently is two campuses, both Prop 39. We got, I would say, very fortunate in that they're extremely proximate to one another. They're basically across the street from one another.
Okay.
So obviously that's good for families.
Yes, sir.
And it's make operating the schools across a split campus much easier than Pueblo, for example, which has, oh, is it a 15-minute drive, 10-minute drive?
One campus is in Maywood and the other is in Huntington Park.
Sure. Yeah.
So they're near each other, the two.
They're near each other. Mm-hmm. There's a chance that as we grow, continue rolling out grade levels at Poder, a very good chance that we could go be split across a third site. Is very, I'd say, you know, high probability of that as we add third grade and fourth grade. Because the from what we're told, there's not. But we're obviously advocating for that not to happen.
Yeah.
But that's a real possibility.
And the entity that determines that is the Montebello Unified School District.
Okay. So if we look at that same composition of enrollment by grade level at Poder, you'll see here the challenges that we have in increasing our cohort or grade level sizes. And so if we go back to the first year into the second year, you'll see we had 30 TK students. And moving into that second year, we had 42 kindergarten students. I don't think we had 100% retention, but basically in aggregate, we added 12 kindergarten students. on top of the 30 TK students we had prior year. And the size of our kindergarten class decreased from 82 students to 42 students. Okay, our kindergarten class decreased 40 students. The enrollment from kindergarten into first grade, you can see, was constant. So despite our efforts to increase enrollment and generate wait lists, that stayed constant. And then this year, this year's enrollment, you can see a somewhat similar pattern. The first grade into second grade stayed, lost one student, it stayed more or less constant. Kindergarten into first, we added six students, overall enrollment. And kindergarten, or TK into kindergarten, you can see there we added 22 students. So again, our ideal model, I acknowledge there's not, I'm going to get into what space there is at Poder, but if we were to move into a permanent facility, we would want to have 112 kids in each of those, the red, the orange, and the green bars. So you can see how far away we are from that. And we don't have a wait list at Poder. So again, it's not as if the only problem is we don't have enough classrooms. Like, there is no wait list to fill those classrooms if we were to have the classrooms.
We do, and we'll get to that.
When we do have actually some empty classrooms.
Was the goal for 2023 to have 80 plus kindergartners as well, and we had room for that?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So we had 82 kindergartners in 21-22.
Yes.
The next year, that drops in half, basically. Was the goal to have the same size as the previous year or more?
Yeah, I guess. Yes.
Same or more.
If I recall correctly, our goal is to have a full kindergarten, like four classrooms of kindergarten.
Four, so. 96.
Yeah, it would have been I guess let me restate it. Our goal would have been basically a total of four classrooms that would have been TK and K. So we probably sought out, I would have normally in the beginning of the recruitment cycle, and I think this would have been the case, we would have assumed we would find about 90 to 100 kindergarten students and 10 to 20 TK students. We ended up last year enrolling more TK students than we originally sought to because we had no demand in kindergarten. And so as a way to buttress enrollment, we added more TK. And that's the same thing that happened the first year. We didn't expect to have, when we started the recruitment cycle, we would have expected around 100 kindergartners and 12 TK based on historic practice across other schools, but the soft demand, we had more TK.
And then that lower kinder now has translated into the first grade, and then filling the first grade, that will translate that first grade into second grade and filling those seats.
So this year, go to the next slide. So let me see if I can orient you to this chart. When we started our recruitment cycle and when we applied for Prop 39, the column on the left is the enrollment we were targeting. And so it's not the full 112. One, because we knew we wanted to try to stay on the current Prop 39 site, and we had saw the soft demand. But we believed it was important to get to two kindergarten classrooms at 60. The school leader said, I have a lot of demand for TK. So let me enroll 48 TK classrooms, two full TK classrooms. And then we wanted to grow first grade to 90 students. So the school leader thought we could, again, go from the 42 kindergartners up to 90 first grade students. And then we were just going to basically fill out the three classrooms that already exist in first grade to get those up to 90 second graders. In May, in the spring, so we saw very soft demand. And so, let me explain. So in order to do that, we would have needed 10 homeroom classes, okay? Our Prop 30, and that's what, you know, our Prop 39 application was oriented around that. We actually got allocated, I believe, 11 homeroom classes. But in May, we were seeing softening demand, or very soft demand. So it became apparent it wasn't prudent for us to build a budget around assuming we were going to get 288 students with the progress that we had made until May. So we revised our budget assumption to build a budget around 230 students. And you can see there the adjustments that was made into enrollment. So to have students to meet our budget now would have only required 9 homeroom classes. And then on the right, you can see what actual enrollment is. And you can see there that that essentially occupies 8 homeroom classes. So I think it's important to understand that while, yes, we don't have space to have 360 kids enrolled, we do have space to have at least the 288 that we originally sought out for, and probably a little bit over 300. Yet we only were able to attract 208 students, and we don't have a wait list. And where our school leader thought she had demand for 2 TK classrooms, we only have ended up with 22 TK students, which has been collapsed into one TK class. So I think this is an important thing to understand with where we are today.
I have a question. The number I find most jarring is actually on the prior slide.
Uh-huh.
When you show what's happened each kindergarten year as we've progressed,
yep.
Have we looked into, I understand there's less kindergarten age kids, but there weren't 50% less between 21 and 22, right? Like 2021, 2022, and 2022, 2023.
Yep.
That's a huge drop. Right. Obviously, there was a lot of engagement and excitement initially, and then something happened a lot less that second year with a slight pickup this year. Do we have any sense as to what occurred?
That's the question and why this is the data showing this. It's, you've heard from all our full-day parents today. It's a stable program, consistent team, consistent school leader. And so those, like, the conditions of the school have remained stable,
mm-hmm.
but the actual ability to fill seats has declined. It's a reflection of if that decline is more mirroring the decline that we're seeing in Montebello, which is one of the largest declines mm-hmm. in the country, in terms of the school age, population of children. And when you dig deeper into that, it's actually those elementary students that has even a bigger decline than that. It's almost as if that scenario is being directly applied to the situation, despite the fact that it is such a higher quality option for the children in Montebello.
Yeah, we've heard that loud and clear. What a great option this is. Okay, explain those numbers. Very surprising.
I have a question related to that. And maybe it's in one of the further slides, but of the families who are enrolled, what percentage are from the Montebello district in comparison to, I know that we have KIPP schools where the families don't live in that area. And the reason I ask is because the need is from Montebello. So I'd like to know of
those families, what percentage are from Montebello?
So the in-district percentage is 64% of the students who are enrolled at Montebello live in the Montebello Unified boundaries.
Okay, so 64% of our kids or families.
Yeah. Which means 36% are from out of district, right?
Was that different in, I'm imagining fingertips, but I mean, again, looking at that 80, I'm kind of with Carlos on this. Like the 82 to 42 drop just is super weird. I mean, was there something different in that maybe we recruited more from outside the area in that first year? Do we have any data handy on that?
I mean, we could get that where like our marketing outreach, but again, wanting to make sure that we reflect our neighborhood, right? Our footprint isn't to go beyond. Is that
what I'm just trying to understand what
I don't.
Right? Like, I mean, it's because like I get that the school age children, the number of school age children is declining, but like a 50% drop is more than. Right. There's something else.
Well, let's look at Raices. If the wait list, I think that would help just like the conditions around us. Like we're not immune. Because here's this is the, you want to talk about this, Kyle?
Yeah, well, you can.
Okay. So, you know, KIPP Raices again, we know the legacy of KIPP Raices in our network of schools. And typically, you know, look, if you look at 4 years ago, I mean, the waitlist demand, and you can see it broken up by grade level. And in the earlier years, again, remember we combined TK and K, they were all in the same classroom. But you can see that demand, right, with the extremely consistent program in school has just steeply declined. In fact, we were meeting with the school leader yesterday, and I mean, it's, you know, the founders here in the room and the consistency and the it's just so clear for families. And to have the wait list drop like this, right? There's something, this external factor truly is like we are having to reckon that we're not immune from the changing conditions that are around us, despite the like incredible quality of the program that we have. You cannot argue with, you know, a blue ribbon school. Yeah, the demographics are really impacting us in new and different ways.
And did you say, sorry, I was looking at trying to find the data, Randy, I'm sorry. I mean, the school's been in a facility for over 10 years. Like, you know, it's had all the conditions in its favor. And we've seen this wait list just evaporate. So, and this is.
And no new schools have opened near it, no.
No, in fact, like where the, you know, Montebello does not have, I believe now we were the only charter because they closed another charter in Montebello.
Which, if anything, should have boosted.
But well, that was in high school.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. And but there are, you know, a few charter options, but they're the consistent ones that have been there. There isn't like, and remember, LAUSD and Montebello is not approving any new, like no one's approving new charters to open right now.
So they're not, it's not like there's competition taking away from
right. Kids. Right. Right. And I looked up your, so a lot of the students that like left Pueblo have some, I don't know where, I can't look that little of a detail, but they have, the majority of them have enrolled in other public schools in California. I just don't know where. I can't tell if it's like in.
Within,
I can't tell. No, it's just in California. So we did. Yeah. So I can't tell if it's like in San Bernardino or in the school that's next door.
You know that because Montebello has also gone down
21%. Correct. Right. And when we looked at the neighborhood schools, because that was a question that we had was, well, is everyone just leaving KIPP and going to the neighborhood school? But when we looked at each neighborhood, I believe, you know, it was 17% for Pueblo, 18% for around that for Poder. And in the teens percent for generation. So they're not going to the schools down the street either.
And one of the things Kyle was saying with opening from Barks was that Montebello and LAUSD are going to be considering closing schools as well. Is there a way to know which ones may be at risk? If it's a nearby school to one of ours, we may benefit from a boosted enrollment. If there is like one that's a little more cuspy near us.
I don't think
My suspicion is it probably years until there's any signal in the which schools. The interview with the superintendent, he signaled that this was coming in future years.
Right. Like the closest districts that are actually closing would be like Hacienda Heights, Puente, but that's not close, but.
All right. The last school here to look at is Generations. Somewhat similar picture. I guess the one thing I did differently on this slide, the to the right is next year, the column on the right, next year, what we would need to be at full enrollment. So I just, that's not like a great news story that we achieved it this year. That's hypothetical for what we would need to demonstrate how far we got to go to get fully enrolled. So as you heard during a lot of the public comments, Generations is in its second year. And I think one bit of context that's important to understand is last year we did have total enrollment of almost 120 students, which was great. However, it was across two grade levels. It was basically split 50-50 between fifth grade and sixth grade. So I think it masked a little bit the actual demand picture. We did that because we were getting very clear signals early on that we weren't going to be able to successfully recruit a full cohort of sixth grade or a full cohort of fifth grade. And so we made that decision to get the enrollment numbers where we'd want them to be in aggregate. We did that with the expectation that in its second year, that we would have enough momentum that we still knew we suspected getting four classrooms of fifth grade would be a challenge because we don't have any feeder school. And fifth grade's not a natural matriculation or transition year for district schools. But we did believe strongly that with 1 year of operation under our belt, we could get to four classrooms of sixth grade. And so we thought we could get to 125 students in sixth grade, because that would be the natural year for kids to come from a district school over to us. And you see there that we were only able to jump about 22 students from our fifth grade enrollment to this year's sixth grade. So well short of the 125 we were seeking, and our fifth grade cohort basically shrunk in half. So we weren't even able to maintain the two classrooms of fifth grade. And then we also weren't able to maintain that the constant cohort size of six in the seventh grade. So we lost a net of 10 kids and were unable to attract enough new ones to make up the difference of the attrition. And so on the right, you see, I just wanted to highlight, in order to get fully enrolled, you can see, how much growth over what we've achieved this year would be needed to get us back on track. So we'd need over 200 students next year to get on track with enrollment compared to the 41 increase we saw this year. And then I also think it's important to articulate our problem is not related to space. I know the school feels like it is incredibly space constrained because we don't have a lot of like space for parent meetings, family meetings, counseling sessions. Like, I'm not trying to say there's adequate space at the school or it's what we want, but we do have adequate, we were assigned adequate classrooms to meet our enrollment targets for the school. And so similarly to the other chart, you can see that we sought out trying to recruit two classrooms of fifth grade, four classrooms of sixth, and two classrooms of seventh, which would have required eight homerooms. We were allocated eight homerooms through the Prop 39 process. And But again, similar to Podair, in the spring, we realized we were not on track to hit that enrollment target. So again, to be pragmatic and prudent with our budgeting, we revised the number that we were going to build the budget on down to 230 students, basically assuming one classroom of fifth, three of six, and two almost fully enrolled seventh, which would have needed six classrooms. And you see there where we ended up getting that. I think my getting my math is bad in the second column, but doesn't matter too much. So you see, our actual enrollment ended up being 158, which fills six classrooms.
Again, just to understand the location, was there a change between the 2 years and where the school was located? Same place?
Constant.
Constant.
It's on the
one site?
Yeah, it's split.
What?
Not yet split. It's on one site.
Okay. When you say not yet split, because it would have to split?
I think there's always a potential as we increase enrollment that a school on Prop 39 could get allocated across multiple sites. The district will only commit to give us 1 year commitments in terms of the space it allocates.
Understood.
I don't actually know how much more. Is there more space we could get theoretically?
Yeah, it's on the top 39 list.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, the district they have over 300 schools with, or 200 schools with less than 300 students. So, and this was that big argument with, like, as we transition to the political pressures, Prop 39 passing, is there is plenty of space for students, but how the district now is going to assign that space has changed. And so, you know, I'll start with Pueblo and Generations because they're authorized by LAUSD, but the LAUSD board, after passing that resolution, asked the superintendent to come back within 45 days. He has not done that. He has indicated that he will come back in January with what the application of that resolution is. And so, you know, one of the sites that was on the list potentially where their co-location could change is KIPP Generations. Not on the list was Pueblo Unido, but because we haven't seen the application of that policy, they could be at risk. The district has we can ask, we would like to be at this place. We can prove that majority of our students live near this location. We can, you know, have all the in-district ADA, and the district now with this resolution has the authority to basically put us anywhere within LAUSD. And as you all know, LAUSD is one of the largest by square miles districts. And I mean, there could be potential for our schools to be placed, you know, in Pacoima, even though all the families live actually in, you know, Gardena area. So that is definitely a challenge. And then, you know, if continuing to expand Pueblo's enrollment could potentially put it across three sites, which is an operational challenge for families, you know, driving between multiple campuses and then to run the school. For Poder, Montebello is not our authorizer, the LA County Office of Education is. We do have to go through the Prop 39 process through the district. So Montebello is our Prop 39 authorizer. And the teachers union there has, I mean, viciously opposed our efforts to obtain like the spaces that our children deserve. And it created a hostile environment that our families face and our students face even walking into school in the mornings or in the evenings. And then growing into our model capacity, right? Again, it's the same concept of, you know, it's really up to the district where to place us. We do not have any like agency at the end of the day.
Just a separate question on this. I mean, it seems like all these policies that Unified is enacting seem very contrary to the intention of
Unified. Yep.
Are there legal challenges to some of these things that they're doing to try and block enrollments?
Because the district has the ability to like place you where they see fit, there isn't really standing to argue. Well, we'll see when that policy comes out to see if there is maybe something there. But right now, there isn't standing to pursue a lawsuit based upon just the resolution passing. So maybe when the superintendent comes out in January, there's something there, but they have the right to give us, you know, the best, the location they think is best. Correct. And then additionally, Prop 39 only obligates school districts to provide space for in-district students. So each of our three schools are in District 80A, which is average daily attendance, hinders our ability to get sufficient space to achieve our full KIPP scale model. And if even if we were to generate sufficient enrollment demand, like which we currently do not have, this is a challenge. And the problem is most acute at Poder with where this is what we were talking about earlier, 64% of students are in district. So even if we hit our enrollment target, though, but have a low portion in District 80A, the district is, they want to, if they're going to have to, and I hate to use that word because that's how they treat it, have to give us space, they want to do it for the students that live in their district. Of course, they wouldn't, you know, bar us from, you know, having a family that's not from Montebello, but they decide to give us steep fiscal penalties. So for every student, you know, that is out of district, there is a fine. And in the past two school years, we've paid over $1 million in over allocation fees. And we will be this year also be paying more penalties. Questions on the time of our... I think my clicker. Let me go back.
Why don't we just go one by one? I hear. So, you know, one of the when we talked in the beginning, tried to show data on how the real estate projects, you know, haven't demonstrated the ability to solve enrollment challenges alone. But I also stated, you know, it is our desire to develop. A permanent site, permanent home for each school, for our school. Unfortunately, we face significant obstacles in doing that for each of these three schools. As you all are well aware, we had a site that we had intended to develop for Pueblo Unido. It was zoned to be by right. We put several million dollars into the pre-development of that site, and anti-charter group opposed the city's interpretation of its municipal code. I don't need to belabor it, but I think we all remember why we or how we got there. But long story short, that project was stopped by the judgment against the city regarding the entitlements. Unfortunately, there is no city adjacent to where we have approval to operate KIPP Pueblo Unido by LAUSD, where there is zoning that would allow us to develop a school by right. And that means any development process would be a discretionary one. I think we can have to assume with the way that the conditions are right now, that any discretionary development would be opposed and blocked by charter opponents. And we'd be facing a multi-year legal battle at best in order to develop a site in any of these cities. Poder has a commonality that, Angela, would you want to go to the next slide? In that there also is within Montebello Unified, there's very few areas that we can develop a school by right. So again, that would avoid going through the discretionary process that can be blocked by an opponent to the project. The only areas within Montebello Unified where it's feasible to develop a school facility by right is in those two little geographic areas highlighted in the or enclosed in the red that are unincorporated in LA County. We did find a parcel of land to purchase. It was off market when we approached the owner. As you guys know, we acquired that land. It's in the red, the circle area, the very northern top of the district. We purchased it with the expectation that enrollment would track with where we were the first year, that we'd stay at capacity, we'd demonstrate demand. And now that we're well under where we expect to be with enrollment, it's going to make underwriting that project very difficult. And another issue is just the area around that school, I think, is also going to pose challenges for recovery to enrollment. The school nearest to it actually has performed quite well, at least on state tests. The FRL rates are quite different than our schools on average, so a potentially different demographic. So anyhow, that's the context we're dealing with at Podere. And then for generations, we face a similar challenge that within the city of Gardena, or within Gardena, there's only one zone that allows school use by right. We've not been able to identify any viable properties within that zone. There is a little sliver of unincorporated LA County adjacent to Gardena, but again, we haven't been able to find any viable sites there. So I think that the outlook for developing a site in Gardena for generations, I think realistically we're looking at many, many years. It could be similar to what we faced with Scholar, where it took over 10 years to develop their site. So I'm just showing this as like, this is our reality, and this is to be pragmatic about where we find ourselves in terms of developing permanent sites for each of these schools.
So in transitioning to how this, how the impact of the under-enrollment in our schools, right? And we've demonstrated how hard recovery is of adding students in this under-enrolled environment. It's actually harder for schools who start under-enrolled and try to make that up as the school grows. And our schools that are near that demand is also diminishing. And families are not making the choice to come into these growing schools. We know that facilities doesn't solve enrollment, but it's important to us. And so at the end of the day, once a school is on an unsustainable path, we have to consider what sacrifices are we making to our program to kind of meet our fiscal responsibility. And so because we want our school students and our schools to have what they need in a school, we subsidize, that difference in under-enrollment. So here for this next section, we'll talk a little bit about the philanthropy that is needed to subsidize the schools that are under-enrolled. So you can see here that our projected need for philanthropy just far outpaces our annual fundraising. Our current trajectory would require $15 million in fundraising per year. This is just to maintain. This is not to make improvements in our current programs. Now, this chart shows all of our under-enrolled schools, and I have a slide to show the difference between these three schools we're talking about. We have consistently over the years, our target has been to raise about $7 million per year, and we have $2.5 million per year of commitments for the next 3 years. You can see here the red bar being the support to unsustainable schools, followed by our signature program, Kip Forward, and then our talent programs and other team member investment, thinking staff appreciation across the region, et cetera. So what this looks like, just looking at these three schools, if we keep the status quo, in 5 years, Kipsoquel will be using between 70% and 94% of its targeted annual fundraising to support approximately 7% of our students. And you can see the difference between the schools, but this is what has been weighing heavily on even having to consider this, is that what does that mean for the 93% of our other students in our schools, right? When we think about the kinds of supports and innovations and recovery efforts that that all of our students should have. And so we're at this critical moment of under-enrollment and unsustainable subsidies to cover that under-enrollment and thinking about how that will start to impact the entire organization.
And what does status quo mean in this context? Like, what does it mean? Are we assuming certain growth projections? What does status quo mean?
So it's assuming that the three schools would continue to build out their great successive grade levels, but we would not see any diverging trends in terms of, you know, how many students in each of those grade levels. So it's not assuming that the...
If there was a decrease this past year, we assume that decrease going...
No, I'm actually assuming it stays fairly constant.
We add those grade levels, but the rate of kind of growing those grade levels is constant to what we've seen now.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not assuming recovery to full, because as you saw from the chart, it would be naive to build a model on that or assumption.
Yeah, and just going back and forth, it's this how we're using the money, but also our ability to even double what our fundraising targets are. And we know that when we look at philanthropy, subsidizing schools is not what donations and philanthropists and grants want to cover. They want to support innovations and recovery, et cetera. And so that is an additional challenge to being able to fundraise in that way.
Yeah, and not only they don't want to, but our largest funders have, they've very clear metrics on what they would expect in terms of enrollment. And I think it will be will significantly hinder our ability to continue attracting money from them if they see that we have a large proportion of our schools under enrolled and we're not doing anything about it to change the situation. So the last financial slide we're touch on is just, we're admittedly fortunate to be in a strong position right now. This is showing the cash that we have that is really unrestricted. It sits at, it's not assigned to any school. So it's cash that we could use to support any part of the organization. If we continue on the path we're on, again, to your question, Carlos, we're not seeing any divergence. And seeing just a kind of a continuing with the trend we're seeing with enrollment. And let's assume we keep the schools open, we develop the facilities that the schools want. I've assumed here for Poder and Generations, not Pueblo, because I truly think it would be very, very difficult to develop a site for Pueblo, but I do have Compton Upper in here, as well as making investments using the McKinsey Scott donation we got a couple of years ago over the next 5 years to invest in academic recovery. You can see here, we're basically project to spend down all of our reserve. This, of course, would still leave reserves at certain schools. Certain schools would have very strong reserves. But as Angela mentioned in the beginning of the meeting, we have no ability to use a reserve at one school to support another school. This was something that the finance committee asked to see a bit of this. So I wanted to present what could impact this could have on our cash.
And okay,
you guys look at a whole different growth trajectories and how that would impact them potentially.
It certainly impacts it to some. A huge chunk of this is the facility, you know, the facility assumption. So you could preserve the, like, if we, you know, maintain the schools, but said we can't develop a facility, we would maintain sufficient reserves, but that's not what, I mean, that's not what we're here. Like, that's not, does not seem to be what people want, right? Not what we want. We want a facility for the school. It would be a much slower decrease in reserves if we did not move to develop the facilities.
Just quickly, those reserves are set by LA Unified?
No. This is just our cash that we've accumulated over the years through donations and net income that is held like at the SST, I'll say. It's not reserves that a school has accumulated. So the reserves that a school has accumulated, that's the one where they're supposed to maintain at least a 3% reserve. But even if when they're in well excess of that, we can't use a reserve at a school for any other school only for that school.
So if we have a huge reserve
at Seoul,
we can't use it.
They have huge reserves, right? Because they're fully.
In another way, I mean, it's not an org chart where we can dividend money up and then contribute it down into another school. We don't have that
restriction by LA Unified.
No.
Go ahead.
It's a function of the fact that in California, each of our schools have to be its own LEA. So we're LA Unified.
We're one KIPP. Doesn't matter. It's individual LEAs.
Yeah,
that's a California requirement, not a LAUSD requirement.
California. So in Texas, KIPP Texas is one charter for the entire state, 60 schools. They can, you know, share their funds between all of those schools. California does not allow for that. And you can imagine the intentionality behind that is to make it hard for charter management organizations to
help each other
out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, LA Unified, 1,300 schools, one LEA. They can move money wherever they want. I mean, you know, they're doing things equitably. They should be considering how many kids and allocating it based on that, but they don't have to. They're under no obligation to do that.
And then finally, you know, the tool that we've been using to kind of address this under enrollment and you know, balancing the amount of subsidies is making cuts to the staffing, which ultimately means cuts to our programming, which is something that we absolutely want to avoid. Like our kids deserve a well-rounded academic, you know, rigorous education with electives, with opportunities, with expanded learning enrichments, the KIPP Forward program. But, you know, we've been at, you know, what would it look like if we were trying to even, you know, continue those budget cuts as a strategy? And so, you know, even if we, and here's a list, eliminate like every elective, eliminate all ops aid support, which is what helps teachers have prep periods and not have to do like recess duty, et cetera. If we reduce the size of the after-school program, eliminate an administrative position, eliminate safety measures, so no security, no crossing guards, eliminate, at Poder, there's supplemental restrooms. If we just, you know, use different restrooms that have been assigned to us, reduce spending on janitorial maintenance. We know, you know, we want our schools to be clean and sparkling and beautiful, and eliminate all field trips. We still would not approach like break even at any of these schools, so even with all of these cuts. And so taking these measures would surely depress our ability to enroll, right? We would look closer and closer to something that our parents are trying to walk away from, right? And that's what the most important part about this is like doing this would diminish the learning environment and it'd be unrecognizable as KIPP. Go ahead.
I'm just keen on like with the declining rate of this, I know one of the concerns that's been emailed is that parents have no guarantee to get into another KIPP school, but the fact that other wait lists at other KIPP schools is going down, does that mean that it's much more likely that...
Yes, so that we have the technical capacity to absorb every student for next year. But that doesn't mean that, you know, there's enough space in the school that is the closest to where you live, to your point, right? And so that's what makes this. And we cannot, if I could direct, we would direct transfer, you know. And last year when Pueblo Upper, we asked for the material vision, we also asked you to pass a policy that would allow us to do a direct transfer. When we submitted that policy per the requirement to LUSD, they immediately told us that we cannot do that. And if we were to implement it, they would begin the revocation of our charters. And so it's not, you know, they're not supportive of us being able to do what our parents are asking for, which is like, we want to stay with KIPP. And that's what's really, really hard about this. But, you know, for example, PROMESA and Endeavor, they have a larger capacity. You saw the slide with PROMESA. And so they have the ability, there's a higher likelihood of families being able to get into that school next year compared to like Iluminar, which actually has a stronger wait list right now than Raíces. So there's space, but again, family preference is really important in proximity to what matters. And so, you know, this recommendation, while anguishing, and I know it's pulled off the agenda for a vote, you know, is in service of the whole of KIPP SoCal when you think about all of our students. And it really could allow us to remedy or reckon with the changing environment around us, and help us invest in improvement and not just invest in status quo. You know, we can't ignore the signals, and we can't think that we're immune to them because the data is showing that we're not. And so, you know, originally my intention was to ask the KIPP SoCal Board of Directors to vote yes on the closure. That recommendation is still my recommendation, but I know that will be tabled for now until a further board meeting. But we'll take more questions.
I really want to encourage all the board members to, I know we've been asking a number of questions throughout, but this is the time to really, without limit, as to digging in further as to what Angela and Kyle has presented in front of everybody. This is the opportunity to ask and dig in deeper and pressure point, whatever you want to call it. Before folks do, I do want to hear what plans, let's say there is a vote to close, what are the plans to take care of the families and what are the plans to take care of the staff?
So we have, I'll start with our team members. And so we have an approach for team members. You know, we are still in a talent crisis. And so our goal is to be able to have a position for every eligible team member at one of our schools. You know, some of those positions, we have more of those spaces, right? Like there's more teacher spaces because that's what we do. We're an educational institution where other roles are a little bit more limited. And so we have a process for, you know, working with the talent team one-on-one to identify like what teachers want next, what team members want next. So we know if they're wanting to return or not. We know what their geographic preferences are for which schools they would be interested in transferring to. We're gathering all that information now and working with our team members one-on-one. I'm not sure, Michelle, but we were looking around maybe 80% of our team members. I remember last time we looked are still interested in remaining with KIPP. I'm not sure if that changed.
At this point, we've heard from 96% of team members what they would prefer to do next year. We've begun one-on-one conversations with team members. As of today, 85% have scheduled those meetings. And by tomorrow, 50% of the meetings will have taken place. From what we hear so far, the vast majority, roughly 90% of team members, are interested in continuing on with KIPP SoCal by transferring to a different site.
So the process will be through the spring because we have to see what is open at our schools and finding the right placement and going through that process. But we also want to make sure that the remainder of the school year is positive for them. So we have, spot bonuses for the additional work that comes along with helping to close out a school. And our school leadership teams are working on what we're calling like transition plans that will make the experience, you know, for students, you know, to celebrate all the work that they would have done and teachers being involved and team members in that process as well. For families, if I could solve this direct transfer problem, like that's the number one ask that we get is, well, if you're going to close a school, then can you just direct transfer us into? And that is just not possible right now with the structure, though. I'm constantly with the team asking every which way and vetting those ways and figuring out if that's possible. So, but right now it's not. So again, we're using a strategy of meeting with all of our families one-on-one. It's challenging because families are, we've broken trust. So building that back is hard, but we are available and meeting with families to review options, both KIPP and non-KIPP, because we want to make sure that we believe in choice. We are a charter school organization and we want to respect that choice. And so we will support students and families with whatever path it is they think that's best for their child.
And just a follow-up question to that. I'm sure you're miles ahead of and already working towards, but within what is allowable,
yeah.
While you can't do a direct transfer, is there some sort of alternate option? Because it seems like for all of us, you know that when you have insecurity around your kids, it's the worst thing you could possibly imagine. So is there some within what is allowable via the LAUSD or whatever the restrictions are, some way of saying, you know, some assurance that there's going to be a place for a kid starting in the fall?
That's a question that I get asked probably 18 times a day. Yeah. Like, what assurances can you make? And I can't make assurances. I mean, like, we'll keep looking for a policy you all could approve to make it happen. But again, everything has to be cleared through our authorizer. The authorizer is hostile right now. And does like passing that Prop 39 resolution in LAUSD was so offensive, right? And so they're willing to do anything to hurt charter school children. And so in my opinion, and I expressed that to the LAUSD board members myself in person, and so to get them on board with the transfer, it will be, you know, a Herculean task to allow students to transfer because they have to approve it.
Got it. Sorry for asking a stupid question, but is there a way to offer an invitation?
No.
You can't do that.
No, it's the lottery process is like the way that charters really are easy for the authorizer to knock us down is violating the lottery process, right? Because this is where it's the free open enrollment school. Like, you're not picking and choosing kids like we get accused of all the time. So we have to be very deliberate and very by the book our authorizer is probably listening to this meeting right now and they will be shaking their heads. We're going to check. So we need to make sure that we're following those rules. And maybe, I mean, I know that they're listening. We'd love to collaborate on this. Set up a meeting. I'm always advocating.
And look, I can tell this to the board and then to the public. Angela, her team members, myself have reached out to LA Unified board members, inviting them to come and visit our schools and see our families. Because my position is they don't get elected only to represent certain kids or certain families. They get elected to represent all of us. And unfortunately, they've gotten into their mindset that charter school families are the devil.
Well, they call this cancer.
Cancer, that's a direct quote. So we continue to reach out to the various board members and their staff to come and sit down with us and find common ground. Zero, zero, zero from them. And I'm not exaggerating. But we're going to continue. We're not going to give up on that.
Did that include
Montebello
Unified?
We're not allowed to talk about, but I can say that, yeah, that all of our authorizers, we work to maintain a relationship with Compton. We have four authorizers, so LACO, Santa Unified, Compton Unified, and Montebello Unified. Oh, well, sorry, who did I miss? LUSD? And so, yeah, so all of our we have an authorizing team. Like most, you know, charters across the country do not have to have an entire team that works with the authorizer, but authorization is very important. Like we want charter schools want to be held accountable. We want to be honestly reviewed, but the bureaucracy that's placed upon us is unreasonable in our opinion. And so we work with all of our authorizers to maintain a relationship, but Montebello Unified School District is also a hostile place for us to operate.
I want to wrap up because we do have a couple of closed session items to discuss. So are there any other questions or comments from my fellow board members? No. Anything else from Angela, Kyle?
For right now.
Okay. All right. For those in the public, we're going to go into closed session to discuss some matters. Then we're going to come back and finish today's meeting.
For our interpreter on the line, you're welcome to log off now. Thank you so much for staying on longer than.
Okay. The board took no action in closed session with no further business to discuss. The meeting is now adjourned at 4:58 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you.